Part 3. 8 weeks after it. 20. 3 hours. That's how long I was in the grand jury room. Ms. Monroe asked me all kinds of questions. What angle was Khalil at when he was shot? Where did he pull his license and registration from? How did Officer Cruz remove him from the car? Did Officer Cruz seem angry? What did he say? She wanted every single detail. I gave her as much as I could. It's been over 2 weeks since I talked to the grand jury, and now we're waiting for their decision, which is similar to waiting for a meteor to hit. You know it's coming. You're just not exactly sure when and where it'll hit, and there ain't shit you can do in the meantime but keep living. So we're living. The sun is out today, but the rain fell in sheets as soon as we pulled into the parking lot of Williamson. When it rains like that while the sun's out, Nana says the devil is beating his wife. Plus, it's Friday the 13th, aka the devil's day, according to Nana. She's probably holed up in the house like it's doomsday. Seven and I dash from the car into the school. The atrium's busy as usual, with people talking to their little cliques or playing around. The school year's almost over, so everybody's goof-off levels are at their highest. And white kid goofing off is a category of its own. I'm sorry, but it is. Yesterday, a sophomore rode down the stairs in the janitor's garbage can. His dumb ass got suspension and a concussion. Stupid. I wiggle my toes. The one day I wear Chucks, it decides to rain. They're miraculously dry. You good? Seven asks, and I doubt it's about the rain. He's been way more protective lately, ever since we got word that King's still pissed I dry snitched. I heard Uncle Carlos tell Daddy it gave the cops another reason to watch King closely. Unless King threw the brick, he hasn't done anything. Yet. So Seven's always on guard, even all the way out here at Williamson. Yeah. I tell him, I'm good.
All right.
He gives me dap and goes off to his locker. I head for mine. Haley and Maya are talking at Maya's locker nearby. Actually, Maya's doing most of the talking. Haley's got her arms folded and rolls her eyes a lot. She sees me down the hall and gets this smug expression. Perfect, she says when I get closer. The liar is here. Excuse me? It's way too early for this bullshit. Why don't you tell Maya how you flat out lied to us? What? Haley hands me two pictures. One is Khalil's thug shot, as Daddy calls it. One of the pictures they've shown on the news. Haley printed it off the internet. Khalil wears a smirk, gripping a handful of money and throwing up a sideways peace sign. The other picture, he's 12. I know because I'm 12 in it, too. It's my birthday party at this laser tag place downtown. Khalil's on one side of me, shoveling strawberry cake into his mouth, and Haley's on my other side, grinning for the camera along with me. I thought he looked familiar, Haley says as smugly as she looks. He is the Khalil you knew, isn't he? I stare at the two Khalils. The pictures only show so much. For some people, the thug shot makes him look just like that, a thug. But I see somebody who was happy to finally have some money in his hand. Damn where it came from. And the birthday picture? I remember how Khalil ate so much cake and pizza, he got sick. His grandma hadn't gotten paid yet, and food was limited in their house. I knew the whole Khalil. That's who I've been speaking up for. I shouldn't deny any part of him, not even at Williamson. I hand the pictures back to Haley. Yeah, I knew him. So what? Don't you think you owe us an explanation? She says. You owe me an apology, too. What? You've basically picked fights with me because you were upset about what happened to him, she says. You even accused me of being racist. But you have said and done some racist stuff, So, Maya shrugs, whether Star lied or not doesn't make it okay. Minority Alliance activated. So, since I unfollowed her Tumblr because I didn't want to see any more pictures of that mutilated kid on my dashboard, his name was Emmett Till, says Maya. Whatever. So, because I didn't want to see that disgusting shit, I'm racist? No, Maya says. What you said about it was racist. And your Thanksgiving joke was definitely racist. Oh my God, are you still upset about that? Haley says. That was so long ago. Doesn't make it okay, I say. And you can't even apologize for it. I'm not apologizing because it was only a joke, she shouts. It doesn't make me a racist. I'm not letting you guys guilt trip me like this. What's next? You want me to apologize because my ancestors were slave masters or something stupid? Bitch, I take a deep breath. Way too many people are watching. I cannot go angry black girl on her. Your joke was hurtful, I say, as calmly as I can. If you give a damn about Maya, you'd apologize and at least try to see why it hurt her. It's not my fault she can't get over a joke from freaking freshman year. Just like it's not my fault you can't get over what happened to Khalil. So I'm supposed to get over the fact he was murdered? Yes, get over it. He was probably going to end up dead anyway. Are you serious? Maya says. He was a drug dealer and a gangbanger, Haley says. Somebody was going to kill him eventually. Get over it? I repeat. She folds her arms and does this little neck movement. Yeah. Isn't that what I said? The cop probably did everyone a favor. One less drug dealer on the... I move Maya out the way and slam my fist against the side of Haley's face. It hurts, but damn, it feels good. Haley holds her cheek, her eyes wide and her mouth open for several seconds. Bitch! She shrieks. She goes straight for my hair like girls usually do, but my ponytail is real. She's not pulling it out. I hit at Haley with my fists, and she slaps and claws me upside my head. I push her off, and she hits the floor. Her skirt goes up, and her pink drawers are out for everybody to see. Laughter erupts around us. Some people have their phones out. I'm no longer Williamson Star or even Garden Heights Star. I'm pissed. I kick and hit at Haley, cuss words flying out my mouth. People gather around us chanting, fight, fight, and one fool even shouts, world star. Shit, I'm gonna end up on that ratchet site. Somebody yanks my arm, and I turn, face to face with Remy, Haley's older brother. You crazy bitch. Before he can finish, bitch, a blur of dreadlocks charges at us and pushes Remy back. Get your hands off my sister, Seven says. And then they're fighting. Seven throws blows like nobody's business, knocking Remy upside his head with several good hooks and jabs. Daddy used to take both of us to the boxing gym after school. Two security guards run over. Dr. Davis, the headmaster, marches toward us. An hour later, I'm in Mama's car. Seven trails us in his Mustang. All four of us have been sentenced to 3 days suspension, despite Williamson's zero tolerance policy. Haley and Remy's dad, a Williamson board member, thought it was outrageous. He said Seven and I should be expelled because we started it, and that Seven shouldn't be allowed to graduate. Dr. Davis told him, given the circumstances, and he looked straight at me, suspension will suffice. He knows I was with Khalil. This is exactly what they expect you to do, Mama says. Two kids from Garden Heights acting like you ain't got any sense. They, with a capital T. There's them, and then there's us. Sometimes they look like us and don't realize they are us. But she was running her mouth, saying Khalil deserved. I don't care if she said she shot him herself. People are gonna say a whole lot, Star. It doesn't mean you hit somebody. You gotta walk away sometimes. You mean walk away and get shot like Khalil did? She sighs. Baby, I understand. No, you don't, I say. Nobody understands. I saw the bullets rip through him. I sat there in the street as he took his last breath. I've had to listen to people try to make it seem like it's okay he was murdered. As if he deserved it. But he didn't deserve to die, and I didn't do anything to deserve seeing that shit. WebMD calls it a stage of grief, anger. But I doubt I'll ever get to the other stages. This one slices me into millions of pieces. Every time I'm whole and back to normal, something happens to tear me apart, and I'm forced to start all over again. The rain lets up. The devil stops beating his wife. But I beat the dashboard, punching it over and over, numb to the pain of it. I want to be numb to the pain of all of this. Let it out, Munch. My mom rubs my back. Let it out. I pull my polo over my mouth and scream until there aren't any screams left in me. If there are any, I don't have the energy to get them out. I cry for Khalil, for Natasha, even for Haley, 'cause damn if I didn't just lose her for good, too. When we turn on our street, I'm snot-nosed and wet-eyed, finally numb. A gray pickup and a green Chrysler 300 are parked behind Daddy's truck in the driveway. Mama and Seven have to park in front of the house. What is this man up to? Mama says. She looks over at me. You feel better? I nod. What other choice do I have? She leans over and kisses my temple. We'll get through this. I promise. We get out. I'm 100% sure the cars in the driveway belong to King Lords and Garden Disciples. In Garden Heights, you can't drive a car that's gray or green unless you claim a set. I expect yelling and cussing when I get inside, but all I hear is Daddy saying, "It don't make no sense, man. For real, it don't." It's standing room only in the kitchen. We can't even get in because some guys are in the doorway. Half of them have green somewhere in their outfits, Garden Disciples. The others have light gray on somewhere. Cedar Grove King Lords. Mr. Rubin's nephew, Tim, sits beside Daddy at the table. I've never noticed that cursive GD tattoo on his arm.
We don't know when the grand jury gonna make their decision, Daddy says. But if they decide not to indict, y'all gotta tell these little dudes not to burn this neighborhood down. What you expect them to do then? Says a GD at the table. Folks tired of the bullshit, Mav.
Straight up, says the King Lord goon, who's at the table too. His long plaits have ponytail holders on them like I used to wear back in the day.
Nothing we can do about it. That's bullshit, says Tim. We can do something. We can all agree the riots got out of hand, right? Says Daddy.
He gets a bunch of yes and rights.
Then we can make sure it doesn't go down like that again. Talk to these kids. Get in their heads. Yeah, they mad. We all mad. But burning down our neighborhood ain't gonna fix it.
Our? Says the GD at the table.
Nigga, you said you moving.
To the suburbs, Goon mocks. You getting a minivan too, Mav? They all laugh at that. Daddy doesn't, though.
I'm moving. So what? I still have a store here. And I'll still give a damn what happens here. Who is it gonna benefit if the whole neighborhood burns down? Damn sure won't benefit none of us.
We gotta be more organized next time, says Tim. For one, make sure our brothers and sisters know they can't destroy black-owned businesses. That messes it up for all of us.
For real, says Daddy. And I know me and Tim out the game, so we can't speak on some things. But all these territory wars got to be put aside somehow. This is bigger than some street shit. And honestly,
All the street shit got these cops thinking they can do whatever they want.
Yeah, I feel you on that, says Goon.
Y'all gotta come together somehow, man, Daddy says, for the sake of the garden. The last thing they'd ever expect is some unity around here, right?
Daddy slaps palms with Goon and the garden disciple. Then Goon and the garden disciple slap palms with each other.
Wow, Seven says.
It's huge that these two gangs are in the same room together. And for my daddy to be the one behind it? Crazy. He notices us in the doorway.
What y'all doing here?
Mama inches into the kitchen, looking around. The kids got suspended.
Suspended?
Daddy says.
For what?
Seven passes him his phone. It's online already? I say.
Yeah, somebody tagged me in it.
Daddy taps the screen, and I hear Haley running her mouth about Khalil, then a loud smack. Some of the gang members watch over Daddy's shoulder.
Damn, little mama, one says. You got hands.
You crazy bit,
Remy says on the phone. A bunch of smacks and oohs follow.
Look at my boy, Daddy says. Look at him.
I ain't know your little nerdy ass had it in you,
a King Lord teases. Mama clears her throat. Daddy stops the video.
All right, y'all,
he says, serious all of a sudden.
I gotta handle some family business. We'll meet back up tomorrow.
Tim and all the gang members clear out, and cars crank up outside. Still no gunshots or arguing. They could have broken out into a gangster rendition of Kumbaya, and I wouldn't be any more shocked than I am. How did you get all of them in here and keep the house in one piece? Mama asks.
I got it like that.
Mama kisses him on the lips. You certainly do. My man, the activist.
Uh-huh.
He kisses her back. Your man. Seven clears his throat.
We're standing right here. Hey. Y'all can't complain, Daddy says. If you wouldn't have been fighting, you wouldn't have to see that.
He reaches over and pinches my cheek a little.
You aight?
The dampness hasn't left my eyes yet, and I'm not exactly smiling. I mutter, yeah. Daddy pulls me onto his lap. He cradles me and switches between kissing my cheek and pinching it, going over and over in a real deep voice.
What's wrong with you, huh? What's wrong with you?
And I'm giggling before I can stop myself. Daddy gives me a sloppy, wet kiss to my cheek and lets me up.
I knew I'd get you laughing. Now what happened?
You saw the video. Haley ran her mouth, so I popped her. Simple as that. That's your child, Maverick, Mama says. Gotta hit somebody because she didn't like what they said.
Mine? Uh-uh, baby, that's all you.
He looks at Seven.
Why were you fighting? Dude came at my sister,
Seven says.
I wasn't gonna let him.
As much as Seven talks about protecting Kenya and Lyric, it's nice that he has my back, too. Daddy replays the video, starting with Haley saying, he was probably gonna end up dead anyway. Wow, Mama says. That little girl has a lot of nerve.
Spoiled ass don't know a damn thing and running her mouth, says Daddy. So, what's our punishment?
Seven asks. Go do your homework, Mama says. That's it? I say. You'll also have to help your dad at the store while you're suspended. She drapes her arms over Daddy from behind. Sound okay, baby? He kisses her arm.
Sounds good to me.
If you can't translate parentish, this is what they really said. Mama, I don't condone what you did, and I'm not saying it's okay, but I probably would have done it too. What about you, baby? Daddy.
Hell yeah, I would have.
I love them for that. Part 4. 10 weeks after it. 21. Still no decision from the grand jury, so we're still living. It's Saturday, and my family is at Uncle Carlos's house for a Memorial Day weekend barbecue, which is also serving as Seven's birthday/graduation party. He turns 18 tomorrow, and he officially became a high school graduate yesterday. I've never seen Daddy cry like he did when Dr. Davis handed Seven that diploma. The backyard smells like barbecue, and it's warm enough that Seven's friends swim in the pool. Sikani and Daniel run around in their trunks and push unsuspecting people in. They get Jess. She laughs about it and threatens to get them later. They try it once with me and Kenya, and never again. All it takes is some swift kicks to their asses. But Devante comes up behind us and pushes me in. Kenya shrieks as I go under, getting my freshly done cornrows soaked and my J's too. I have on board shorts and a tankini, but they're new and cute, meaning they're supposed to be looked at, not swam in. I break the surface of the water and gulp in air. Star, you okay? Kenya calls. She's run about 5 feet away from the pool. You're not gonna help me out? I say. Girl, nah, and mess up my outfit? You seem all right. Sikani and Daniel whoop and cheer for Devante like he's the greatest thing since Spider-Man. Bastards, I climb out that pool so fast. Uh-oh, Devante says, and the three of them take off in separate directions. Kenya goes after Devante. I run after Sikani because, damn it, blood is supposed to be thicker than pool water. Mama! He squeals. I catch him by his trunks and pull them way up, almost to his neck, until he has the worst wedgie ever. He gives a high-pitched scream. I let go and he falls on the grass, his trunk so far up his butt it looks like he's wearing a thong. That's what he gets. Kenya brings Devante to me, holding his arms behind him like he's under arrest. Apologize, she says. No! Kenya yanks on his arms. Okay, okay! I'm sorry. She lets go. Better be. Devante rubs his arm with a smirk. Violent ass? Punk ass? She snips back. He flicks his tongue at her, and she goes, boy, bye. This is flirting for them, believe it or not. I almost forgot Devante's hiding from her daddy. They act like they've forgotten, too. Devante gets me a towel. I snatch it and dry my face as I head to the poolside loungers with Kenya. Devante sits beside her on one. Ava skips over with her baby doll in a comb, and I naturally expect her to shove them into my hands. She hands them to Devante instead. Here, she tells him, and skips off. And he starts combing the doll's hair. Kenya and I stare at him for the longest. What? He says. We bust out laughing. She got you trained, I say. Man, he groans. She cute, okay? I can't tell her no. He braids the doll's hair, and his long, thin fingers move so quickly, they look like they'll get tangled. My little sisters did me like this all the time. His tone dips when he mentions them. You heard from them or your mama? I ask. Yeah, about a week ago. They at my cousin's house. She live in, like, the middle of nowhere. Mom's been a mess because she didn't know if I was okay. She apologized for leaving me and for being mad. She want me to come stay with them. Kenya frowns. You leaving? I don't know. Mr. Carlos and Mrs. Pam said I can stay with them for my senior year. My mama said she'd be okay with that if it means I stay out of trouble. He examines his handiwork. The doll has a perfect French braid. I gotta think about it. I kinda like it out here. Salt and Pepper's Push It blasts from the speakers. That's one song Daddy shouldn't play. The only thing worse would be that old song Back That Thang Up. Mama loses her damn mind when it comes on. Really, just say, Cash Money Records taking over for the 99 and the 2000, and she suddenly becomes ratchet as hell.
She and Aunt Pam both go, "Hey!" to Salt and Pepper and do all these old dance moves. I like 90s shows and movies, but I do not want to see my mom and auntie reenact that decade in dance. Seven and his friends circle around them and cheer them on. Seven's the loudest. "Go, Ma. Go, Aunt Pam." Daddy jumps in the middle of the circle behind Mama. He puts both hands behind his head and moves his hips in a circle. Seven pushes Daddy away from Mama, going, "No, stop." Daddy gets around him and dances behind Mama. "Uh-uh," Kenya laughs. "That's too much." Devante watches them with a smile.
"You were right about your aunt and Uncle Star. They ain't too bad. Your grandma kind of cool, too."
"Who? I know you don't mean Nana."
"Yeah, her. She found out I play spades. The other day, she took me to a game after she finished tutoring me. She called it extra credit work. We've been cool ever since."
Figures. Chris and Maya walk through the gate, and my stomach gets all jittery. I should be used to my two worlds colliding, but I never know which star I should be. I can use some slang, but not too much slang. Some attitude, but not too much attitude, so I'm not a sassy black girl. I have to watch what I say and how I say it, but I can't sound white. Shit is exhausting. Chris and his new bro, Devante, slap palms. Then Chris kisses my cheek. Maya and I do our handshake. Devante nods at her. They met a few weeks ago. Maya sits beside me on the lounger. Chris squeezes his big butt between us, pushing both of us aside a little. Maya flashes him a stink eye. "Seriously, Chris?"
"Hey, she's my girlfriend. I get to sit next to her."
No. Besties before testies. Kenya and I snicker, and Devante goes, "Damn." The jitters ease up a bit. "So you're Chris," Kenya says. She's seen pictures on my Instagram.
"Yep, and you're Kenya?"
He's seen pictures on my Instagram, too. "The one and only." Kenya eyes me and mouths, "He is fine." Like I didn't know that already. Kenya and Maya look at each other. Their paths last crossed almost a year ago at my sweet 16, if you can consider that path crossing. Haley and Maya were at one table, Kenya and Khalil at another table with Seven. They never talked. "Maya, right?" Kenya says. Maya nods. "The one and only." Kenya's lips curl up. "Your kicks are cute." "Thanks," Maya says, checking them out for herself. Nike Air Max 95s. "They're supposed to be running shoes. I never run in them."
"I don't run in mine either," Kenya says. "My brother's the only person I know who actually runs in them."
Maya laughs. "Okay, this is good so far. Nothing to worry about." Until Kenya goes, "So where Blondie at?" Chris snorts. Maya's eyes widen. "Kenya, that's not her name," I say.
"You knew who I was talking about, though, didn't you?"
"Yep," Maya says. "She's probably somewhere licking her wounds after Star kicked her ass."
"What?"
Kenya shouts.
"Star, you ain't tell me about that."
"It was like 2 weeks ago," I say. "Wasn't worth talking about. I only hit her."
"Only hit her?" Maya says. "You Mayweathered her."
Chris and Devante laugh.
Wait, Kenya says. "What happened?"
So I tell her about it without really thinking about what I say or how I sound. I just talk. Maya adds to the story, making it sound worse than it was, and Kenya eats it up. We tell her how Seven gave Remy a couple of hits, which has Kenya beaming, talking about, "My brother don't play," like he's only her brother, but whatever. Maya even tells her about the Thanksgiving cat thing.
"I told Star we minorities gotta stick together," Maya says.
"So true," says Kenya. White people been sticking together forever.
Well, Chris blushes. This is awkward.
You'll get over it, Boo, I say. Maya and Kenya crack up. My two worlds just collided. Surprisingly, everything's all right. The song changes to Wobble. Mama runs over and pulls me up. Come on, Munch. I can't dig my feet in the grass fast enough. Mommy, no! Hush, girl, come on, y'all too, she hollers back to my friends. Everybody lines up on the grassy area that's become the makeshift dance floor. Mama pulls me to the front row. Show 'em how it's done, baby, she says. Show 'em how it's done. I stay still on purpose. Dictator or not, she's not gonna make me dance. Kenya and Maya egg her on in egging me on. Never thought they'd team up against me. Shoot. Before I know it, I'm wobbling. I have duck lips, too, so you know I'm feeling it. I talk Chris through the steps, and he keeps up. I love him for trying. Nana joins in, doing a shoulder shimmy that's not the wobble, but I doubt she cares. The Cupid Shuffle comes on, and my family leads everybody else on the front row. Sometimes we forget which way is right and which is left, and we laugh way too hard at ourselves. Embarrassing dancing and dysfunction aside, my family's not so bad. After all that wobbling and shuffling, my stomach begs for some food. I leave everybody else doing the biker's shuffle, which is a whole new level of shuffling, and most of our party guests are lost as hell. Aluminum serving trays crowd the kitchen counter. I stack a plate with some ribs, wings, and corn on the cob. I scoop a nice amount of baked beans on there somehow. No potato salad. That's the devil's food. All that mayonnaise. I don't care if Mama made it. I'm not touching that mess. I refuse to eat outside. Too many bugs that could get on my food. I plop down at the dining room table, and I'm about to go in on my plate. But the damn phone rings. Everybody else is outside, leaving me to answer. I shove a chicken wing in my mouth. Hello? I chomp in the other person's ear. Rude? Definitely. Am I starving? Hell yeah. Hi, this is the front security gate. Aisha Robinson is asking to visit your residence. I stop chewing. Aisha was MIA at Seven's graduation, which she was invited to. So why did she show up to the party she wasn't invited to? How did she even find out about it? Seven didn't tell her, and Kenya swore she wouldn't. She lied and told her mama and daddy she was hanging with some other friends today. I take the phone outside to daddy because, shit, I don't know what to do. I go out at a good time, too. He's trying and failing to nay-nay. I have to call him a second time for him to stop that atrocity and come over. He grins. You ain't know your daddy had it in him, did you? I still don't. Here. I hand him the phone. That's neighborhood security. Aisha's at the security gate. His grin disappears. He plugs one ear and puts the phone to his other. Hello? The security guard talks for a moment. Daddy motions Seven to the patio.
Hold on.
He covers the receiver.
Your mama at the gate. She wanna see you.
Seven's eyebrows knit together.
How did she know we're here? Your grandma's with her. Didn't you invite her?
Yeah, but not Aisha.
Look, man, if you want her to come back for a little bit, it's cool.
Daddy says.
I'll make Devante go inside so she won't see him. What you want to do?
Pops, can you tell her?
Nah, man, that's your mama. You handle that.
Seven bites his lip for a moment. He sighs through his nose.
All right.
Aisha pulls up out front. I follow Seven, Kenya, and my parents to the driveway. Seven always has my back. I figure he needs me to have his, too. Seven tells Kenya to stay back with us and goes toward Aisha's pink BMW. Lyric jumps out the car. Sevy! She runs to him,
the ball-shaped ponytail holders on her hair bouncing. I hated wearing those things. All it takes is one hitting you between your eyes and you're done. Lyric launches into Seven's arms and he swings her around. I can't lie, I always get a little jealous when I see Seven with his other sisters. It doesn't make sense, I know, but they share a mama, and it makes things different between them. It's like they have a stronger bond or something. But there's no way in hell I'd trade mama for Aisha. Nope. Seven keeps Lyric on his hip and hugs his grandma with one arm. Aisha gets out. A bob haircut has replaced her down-to-the-ass Indian import. She doesn't even try to tug her hot pink dress down that obviously rode up her thighs during the drive. Or maybe it didn't ride up, and that's where it always was. Nope. Wouldn't trade Mama for anything.
So, you gonna have a party and not invite me, Seven? Aisha asks. A birthday party at that? I'm the one who gave birth to your ass.
Seven glances around. At least one of Uncle Carlos's neighbors is looking.
Not now.
Oh, hell yes, now. I had to find out from my mama because my own son couldn't be bothered to invite me.
She sets her sharp glare on Kenya.
And this little fast thing lied to me about it. I ought to whoop your ass.
Kenya flinches like Aisha already hit her. Mama, don't blame Kenya, says Seven, setting Lyric down. I asked her not to tell you, Aisha.
Aisha?
She echoes, all in his face.
Who the hell you think you talking to like that?
What happens next is like when you shake a soda can real hard. From the outside, you can't tell anything is going on. But then you open it, and it explodes.
This is why I didn't invite you, Seven shouts. This, right now, you don't know how to act.
Oh, so you ashamed of me, Seven?
You're fucking right I'm ashamed of you.
Whoa, Daddy says, stepping between them. He puts his hand on Seven's chest.
Seven, calm down. Nah, Pops, let me tell her how I didn't invite her because I didn't want to explain to my friends that my stepmom isn't my mom, like they think. Or how I never once corrected anybody at Williamson who made the assumption. Hell, it wasn't like she ever came to any of my stuff, so why bother? You couldn't even show up to my graduation yesterday.
Seven, Kenya pleads, stop.
No, Kenya,
he says, his sights square on their mama.
I'll tell her how I didn't think she gave a damn about my birthday, because guess what? She never has. You didn't invite me? You didn't invite me? He mocks. Hell no, I didn't. And why the fuck should I?
Aisha blinks several times and says in a voice like broken glass,
after all I've done for you.
All you've done for me? What, putting me out the house? Choosing a man over me every single chance you got? Remember when I tried to stop King from whooping your ass, Aisha? Who did you get mad at?
Seven, Daddy says.
Me! You got mad at me! Said I made him leave. That's what you call doing for me? That woman right there?
He stretches his arm toward Mama.
Did everything you were supposed to, and then some. How dare you stand there and take credit for it? All I ever did was love you.
His voice cracks.
That's it. And you couldn't even give that back to me.
The music has stopped, and heads peek over the backyard fence. Layla approaches him. She hooks her arm through his. He allows her to take him inside. Aisha turns on her heels and starts for her car.
Aisha, wait,
Daddy says.
Nothing to wait for.
She throws her door open.
You happy, Maverick? You and that trick you married finally turned my son against me. Can't wait till King fuck y'all up for letting that girl snitch on him on TV.
My stomach clenches.
Tell him try it if he wants and see what happens, says Daddy.
It's one thing to hear gossip that somebody plans to fuck you up, but it's a whole different thing to hear it from somebody who would actually know. But I can't worry about King right now. I have to go to my brother. Kenya's at my side. We find him on the bottom of the staircase. He sobs like a baby. Layla rests her head on his shoulder. Seeing him cry like that, I want to cry. Seven. He looks up with red, puffy eyes that I've never seen on my brother before. Mama comes in, Layla gets up, and Mama takes her spot on the steps. Come here, baby, she says, and they somehow hug. Daddy touches my shoulder and Kenya's.
Go outside, y'all.
Kenya's face is scrunched up like she's gonna cry. I grab her arm and take her to the kitchen. She sits at the counter and buries her face in her hands. I climb onto the stool and don't say anything. Sometimes it's not necessary. After a few minutes, she says, I'm sorry my daddy's mad at you. This is the most awkward situation ever. My friend's dad possibly wants to kill me. Not your fault, I mumble. I understand why my brother didn't invite my mama. But her voice cracks. She going through a lot, Star, with him. Kenya wipes her face on her arm. I wish she'd leave him. Maybe she afraid to? I say. Look at me. I was afraid to speak out for Khalil, and you went off on me about it.
I didn't go off.
Yeah, you did. Trust me, no, I didn't. You'll know when I go off on you. Anyway, I know it's not the same, but good Lord, I never thought I'd say this. I think I understand, Aisha. It's hard to stand up for yourself sometimes. She may need that push, too. So you want me to go off on her? I can't believe you think I went off on you, sensitive ass. My mouth flies open. You know what? I'm gonna let that slide. Nah, I ain't say you need to go off on her. That would be stupid. Just, I sigh. I don't know. I don't either. We go silent. Kenya wipes her face again. I'm good. She gets up. I'm good. You sure? Yes. Stop asking me that. Come on. Let's go back out there and stop them from talking about my brother, because you know they're talking. She heads for the door, but I say, our brother. Kenya turns around. What? Our brother. He's mine, too. I didn't say it in a mean way, or even with an attitude. I swear. She doesn't respond. Not even an okay. Not that I expected her to suddenly go, of course he's our brother. I'm extremely sorry for acting like he wasn't yours, too. I hoped for something, though. Kenya goes outside. Seven and Aisha unknowingly hit the pause button on the party. The music's off, and Seven's friends stand around talking in hushed tones. Chris and Maya walk up to me.
Is Seven okay?
Maya asks. Who turned the music off? I ask. Chris shrugs. I pick up Daddy's iPod from the patio table, our DJ for the afternoon that's hooked up to the sound system. Scrolling through the playlist, I find this Kendrick Lamar song Seven played for me one day, right after Khalil died. Kendrick raps about how everything will be all right. Seven said it's for both of us. I hit play and hope he hears it. It's for Kenya, too. Midway through the song, Seven and Layla come back out. His eyes are puffy and pink, but dry. He smiles at me a little and gives a quick nod. I return it. Mama leads Daddy outside. They're both wearing cone-shaped birthday hats, and Daddy carries a huge sheet cake with candles lit on top of it. Happy birthday to ya, they sing. And Mama does this not as embarrassing shoulder bounce. Happy birthday to ya. Happy birth day. Seven smiles from ear to ear. I turn the music down. Daddy sets the cake on the patio table and everybody crowds around it, and Seven. Our family, Kenya, Devante, and Layla, basically all the black people, sing the Stevie Wonder version of Happy Birthday. Maya seems to know it. A lot of Seven's friends look lost. Chris does too. These cultural differences are crazy sometimes. Nana takes the song way too far and hits notes that don't need to be hit. Mama tells her, "The candles are about to go out, Mama." She's so damn dramatic. Seven leans down to blow the candles out, but Daddy says,
"Wait, man, you know you don't blow no candles out till I say something." "Oh, Pops."
"He can't tell you what to do, Seven," Sekani chirps. "You're grown now."
Daddy shoots Sekani an up and down look.
"Boy?"
He turns to Seven.
"I'm proud of you, man. Like I told you, I never got a diploma. A lot of young brothers don't get theirs. And where we come from, a lot of them don't make it to 18. Some do make it, but they're messed up by the time they get there. Not you, though. You're going places, no doubt. I always knew that. See, I believe in giving my kids names that mean something. Sekani, that means merriment and joy."
I snort. Sekani side-eyes me.
"I named your sister Star because she was my light in the darkness. Seven, that's a holy number, the number of perfection. I ain't saying you're perfect, nobody is, but you're the perfect gift God gave me. I love you, man. Happy birthday and congratulations."
Daddy affectionately clasps Seven's neck. Seven grins wider.
"Love you too, Pops."
The cake is one of Mrs. Rook's red velvets. Everybody goes on and on about how good it is. Uncle Carlos pigs out on at least 3 slices. There's more dancing, laughing. All in all, it's a good day. Good days don't last forever, though. Part 5. 13 weeks after it. The decision. 22. In our new neighborhood, I can simply tell my parents I'm going for a walk and leave. We just got off the phone with Ms. Ofra, who said the grand jury will announce their decision in a few hours. She claims only the grand jurors know the decision, but I've got a sinking feeling I know it. It's always the decision. I stick my hands in the pockets of my sleeveless hoodie. Some kids race past on bikes and scooters, nearly knock me over. Doubt they're worried about the grand jury's decision. They aren't hurrying inside like the kids back home are probably doing. Home. We started moving into our new house this past weekend. 5 days later, this place doesn't feel like home yet. It could be all the unpacked boxes, or the street names, I don't know. And it's almost too quiet. No Fody Ounce in his creaky cart, or Mrs. Pearl hollering a greeting from across the street. I need normal. I text Chris. Less than 10 minutes later, he picks me up in his dad's Benz. The Bryants live in the only house on their street that has a separate house attached to it for a butler. Mr. Bryant owns 8 cars, mostly antiques, and a garage to store them all. Chris parks in one of the 2 empty spots. "Your parents gone?" I ask.
"Yep. Date night at the country club."
Most of Chris's house looks too fancy to live in. Statues, oil paintings, chandeliers. A museum more than a home. Chris's suite on the 3rd floor is more normal looking. There's a leather couch in his room, right in front of the flat screen TV and video game systems. His floor is painted to look like a half basketball court, and he can play on an actual hoop on his wall. His California king-size bed has been made, a rare sight. I never knew there was anything larger than a king-sized bed before I met him. I pull my Tims off and grab the remote from his nightstand. As I throw myself onto his bed, I flick the TV on. Chris steps out his chucks and sits at his desk, where a drum pad, a keyboard, and turntables are hooked up to a Mac.
"Check this out," he says, and plays a beat.
I prop myself up on my elbows and nod along. It's got an old-school feel to it, like something Dre and Snoop would have used back in the day. "Nice."
"Thanks. I think I need to take some of that bass out, though."
He turns around and gets to work. I pick at a loose thread on his comforter. "Do you think they're gonna charge him?"
"Do you?"
"No." Chris spins his chair back around. My eyes are watery and I lie on my side. He climbs in next to me so we're facing each other. Chris presses his forehead against mine.
"I'm sorry."
"You didn't do anything."
"But I feel like I should apologize on behalf of white people everywhere."
"You don't have to."
"But I want to."
Lying in his California king-size bed, in his suite, in his gigantic house, I realized the truth. I mean, it's been there all along. But in this moment, lights flash around it. "We shouldn't be together," I say.
"Why not?"
"My old house in Garden Heights could fit in your house."
"So?"
"My dad was a gangbanger."
"My dad gambles."
"I grew up in the projects."
"I grew up with a roof over my head, too."
I sigh and start to turn my back to him. He holds my shoulder so I won't.
"Don't let this stuff get in your head again, Star."
"You ever notice how people look at us?"
"What people?"
"People," I say. It takes them a second to realize we're a couple.
"Who gives a fuck?"
"Me."
"Why?"
"Because you should be with Haley." He recoils.
"Why the hell would I do that?"
"Not Haley, but you know, blonde, rich, white."
"I prefer beautiful, amazing, Star."
He doesn't get it. But I don't want to talk about it anymore. I want to get so caught up in him that the grand jury's decision isn't even a thing. I kiss his lips, which always have and always will be perfect. He kisses me back. And soon we're making out like it's the only thing we know how to do. It's not enough. My hands travel below his chest, and he's bulging in more than his arms. I start unzipping his jeans. He grabs my hand.
"Whoa, what are you doing?"
"What do you think?"
His eyes search mine. "Star, I want to, I do."
"I know you do. And it's the perfect opportunity." I trail kisses along his neck, getting each of those perfectly placed freckles. "Nobody's here but us."
"But we can't,"
he says, voice strained.
"Not like this."
"Why not?" I slip my hand in his pants, heading for the bulge.
"Because you're not in a good place."
I stop. He looks at me, and I look at him. My vision blurs. Chris wraps his arms around me and pulls me closer. I bury my face in his shirt. He smells like a perfect combination of Lever, soap, and Old Spice. The thump of his heart is better than any beat he's ever made. My normal, in the flesh. Chris rests his chin on top of my head.
"Star."
He lets me cry as much as I need to. My phone vibrates against my thigh, waking me up. It's almost pitch black in Chris's room. The red sky shines a bit of light through his windows. He sleeps soundly and holds me like that's how he always sleeps. My phone buzzes again. I untangle myself out of Chris's arms and crawl to the foot of the bed. I fish my phone from my pocket. Seven's face lights up my screen. I try not to sound too groggy. Hello?
Where the hell are you?
Seven barks. Has the decision been announced?
No. Answer my question.
Chris's house. Seven sucks his teeth.
I don't even want to know. Is Devante over there?
No. Why?
Uncle Carlos said he walked out a while ago. Nobody's seen him since.
My stomach clenches. What?
Yeah. If you weren't fooling around with your boyfriend, you'd know that.
You're really making me feel guilty right now? He sighs.
I know you're going through a lot, but damn, Star, you can't disappear on us like that. Ma's looking for you. She's worried sick. And Pops had to go protect the store in case, you know.
I crawl back to Chris and shake his shoulder. Come get us, I tell Seven. We'll help you look for Devante. I send Mama a text to let her know where I am, where I'm going, and that I'm okay. I don't have the guts to call her. And have her go off on me? Nah, no thanks. Seven is talking on his phone when he pulls into the driveway. By the look on his face, somebody's gotta be dead. I throw open the passenger door. What's wrong?
Kenya, calm down, he says. What happened?
Seven listens and looks more horrified by the second. Then he suddenly says,
I'm on my way,
and tosses the phone on the back seat.
It's Devante.
Well, wait. I'm holding the door and he's revving up his engine. What happened?
I don't know. Chris, take Star home.
And let you go to Garden Heights by yourself? But shoot, actions are louder. I climb in the passenger seat.
I'm coming too,
Chris says. I let my seat forward and he climbs in the back. Luckily or unluckily, Seven doesn't have time to argue. We pull off. Seven cuts the 45-minute drive to Garden Heights to 30. The entire drive, I plead with God to let Devante be okay. The sun's gone by the time we get off the freeway. I fight the urge to tell Seven to turn around. This is Chris's first time in my neighborhood. But I have to trust him. He wants me to let him in, and this is the most in he could get. At the Cedar Grove Projects, there's graffiti on the walls and broken down cars in the courtyard. Under the Black Jesus mural at the clinic, grass grows up through the cracks in the sidewalk. Trash litters every curb we pass. Two junkies argue loudly on a corner. There's lots of hoopties, cars that should have been in the junkyard a long time ago. The houses are old, small. Whatever Chris thinks doesn't come out his mouth. Seven parks in front of Aisha's house. The paint is peeling and the windows have sheets in them instead of blinds and curtains. Aisha's pink BMW and King's gray one make an L shape on the yard. The grass is completely gone from years of them parking there. Gray cars fitted with rims sit in the driveway and along the street. Seven turns his ignition off.
Kenya said they're all in the backyard. I should be good. Y'all stay here.
Judging by those cars, for one Seven, there's about 50 King Lords. I don't care if King is pissed at me. I'm not letting my brother go in there alone. I'm coming with you.
No.
I said I'm coming.
Star, I don't have time for...
I fold my arms. Try and make me stay. He can't, and he won't. Seven sighs.
Fine. Chris, stay here. Hell no, I'm not staying out here by myself.
We all get out. Music echoes from the backyard along with random shouts and laughter. A pair of gray high tops dangle by their laces from the utility line in front of the house, telling everybody who can decipher the code that drugs are sold here. Seven takes the steps two at a time and throws the front door open.
Kenya!
Compared to the outside, the inside is five-star hotel nice. They have a damn chandelier in the living room and brand new leather furniture. A flat screen TV takes up a whole wall, and tropical fish swim around in a tank on another wall. The definition of hood rich.
Kenya!
Seven repeats, going down the hall. From the front door, I see the back door. A whole lot of king lords dance with women in the backyard. King's in the middle, in a high-backed chair, his throne, puffing on a cigar. Aisha sits on the arm of the chair, holding a cup and moving her shoulders to the music. Thanks to the dark screen on the door, I can see outside, but chances are they can't see inside. Kenya peeks into the hall from one of the bedrooms. In here. Devante lies on the floor in the fetal position at the foot of a king-size bed. The plush white carpet is stained with his blood as it trickles from his nose and mouth. There's a towel beside him, but he's not doing anything with it. One of his eyes has a fresh bruise around it. He groans, clutching his side. Seven looks at Chris.
Help me get him up.
Chris has paled.
Maybe we should call. Chris, man, come on.
Chris inches over and the two of them sit Devante up against the bed. His nose is swollen and bruised, and his upper lip has a nasty cut. Chris passes him the towel.
Dude, what happened? I walked into King's Fist, man. What you think happened? They jumped me.
I couldn't stop them, Kenya says, all stuffed up sounding like she's been crying. I'm so sorry, Devante.
This shit ain't your fault, Kenya, Devante says. Are you all right?
She sniffs and wipes her nose on her arm. I'm okay. He only pushed me. Seven's eyes flash.
Who pushed you?
She tried to stop them from beating my ass, Devante says. King got mad and pushed her out the...
Seven marches to the door. I catch his arm and dig my feet into the carpet to keep him from moving, but he ends up pulling me with him. Kenya grabs his other arm. In this moment, he's our brother, not just mine or hers. Seven, no, I say. He tries to pull away, but my grip and Kenya's grip are steel. You go out there and you're dead. His jaw is hard. His shoulders are tense. His narrowed eyes are set on the doorway.
Let me go,
he says. Seven, I'm okay, I promise, Kenya says. But Star's right. We gotta get Vante out of here before they kill him. They just waiting for the sun to set.
He put his hands on you,
Seven snarls.
I said I wouldn't let that happen again.
We know, I say. But please don't go back there. I hate stopping him because I promise I want somebody to whoop King's ass. It can't be Seven. No way in hell. I can't lose him too. I'd never be normal again. He snatches away from us, and the sting that would usually come with that gesture is missing. I understand his frustration like it's mine. The back door squeaks and slams closed. Shit. We freeze. Feet thump against the floor, drawing nearer. Aisha appears in the doorway. Nobody speaks. She stares at us, sipping from a red plastic cup. Her lip is curled up slightly, and she takes her sweet time to speak, like she's getting a kick out of our fear. Chomping on some ice, she looks at Chris and says,
Who this little white boy y'all done brought up in my house?
Aisha smirks and eyes me.
I bet he yours, ain't he? That's what happens when you go to them white folks' schools.
She leans against the door frame. Her gold bracelets jingle as she lifts her cup to her lips again.
I would have paid to see Maverick's face the day you brought this one home. Shit. I'm surprised Seven got a black girl.
At his name, Seven snaps out his trance.
Can you help us?
Help you? She echoes with a laugh. What? With Devante? What I look like helping him?
Mama.
Now our mama, she says. What happened to that Aisha shit from the other week, huh? Seven? See, baby, you don't know how the game work. Let mama explain something to you, okay? When Devontae stole from King, he earned an ass whooping. He got one. Anybody who helps him is asking for it too, and they better be able to handle it. She looks at me. That goes for dry snitches too. All it takes is her hollering for King. Her eyes flick toward the back door. The music and laughter rise in the air. I tell y'all what, she says, and turns to us. Y'all better get Devontae's sorry ass out my bedroom, bleeding on my carpet and shit. And got the nerve to use one of my damn towels? Matter of fact, get him and that snitch out my house. Seven says, what? You deaf too? She says, I said, get them out my house and take your sisters. What I gotta take them for? Seven says, because I said so. Take them to your grandma's or something. I don't care. Get them out my face. I'm trying to get my party on. Shit. When none of us move, she says, go. I'll get Lyric, Kenya says, and leaves. Chris and Seven each take one of Devontae's hands and pull him up. Devontae winces and cusses the whole way. Once on his feet, he bends over, holding his side, but slowly straightens up and takes steadying breaths. He nods, I'm good. Just sore. Hurry up, Aisha says. Damn, I'm tired of looking at y'all. Seven's glare says what he doesn't. Devontae insists he can walk, but Seven and Chris lend their shoulders for support anyway. Kenya's already at the front door with Lyric on her hip. I hold the door open for all of them and look toward the backyard. Shit, King's rising off his throne. Aisha goes out the back door, and she's in his face before he can fully stand up. She grabs his shoulders and guides him back down, whispering in his ear. He smiles widely and leans back into his chair. She turns around, so her back is to him, the view he really wants, and starts dancing. He smacks her ass. She looks my way. I doubt she can see me, but I don't think I'm one of the people she's trying to see anyway. They've gone to the car. Suddenly, I get it.
Star, come on,
Seven calls. I jump off the porch. Seven holds his seat forward for me and Chris to climb in the back with his sisters. Once we're in, he drives off.
We gotta get you to the hospital, Vontae, he says.
Devontae presses the towel against his nose and looks at the blood staining it.
I'll be all right, he says,
like that quick observation tells him what a doctor can't.
We lucky Aisha helped us, man, for real.
Seven snorts.
She wasn't helping us. Somebody could be bleeding to death and she would be more worried about her carpet and getting her party on.
My brother is smart. So smart that he's dumb. He's been hurt by his mama so much that when she does something right, he's blind to it. Seven, she did help us, I say. Think about it. Why did she tell you to take your sisters too?
'Cause she didn't want to be bothered, as always.
No. She knows King will go off when he sees Devontae's gone, I say. If Kenya's not there, Lyric's not there, who do you think he's gonna take it out on? He says nothing. Then,
shit.
The car makes an abrupt stop, lurching us forward, then sideways as Seven makes a wide U-turn. He hits the gas and houses blur past us.
Seven, no, Kenya says. We can't go back.
I'm supposed to protect her.
No, you're not, I say. She's supposed to protect you, and she's trying to do that now. The car slows down. It comes to a complete stop a few houses away from Aisha's.
If he,
Seven swallows.
If she, he'll kill her.
He won't.
Kenya says. She's lasted this long. Let her do this, Seven. A Tupac song on the radio makes up for our silence. He raps about how we gotta start making changes. Khalil was right. Pac's still relevant.
All right,
Seven says, and he makes another U-turn.
All right.
The song fades off.
This is the hottest station in the nation, Hot 105, the DJ says. If you're just tuning in, the grand jury has decided not to indict Officer Brian Cruz Jr. in the death of Khalil Harris. Our thoughts and prayers are with the Harris family. Stay safe out there, y'all.
23. It's a quiet ride to Seven's grandma's house. I told the truth. I did everything I was supposed to do, and it wasn't fucking good enough. Khalil's death wasn't horrible enough to be considered a crime. But damn, what about his life? He was once a walking, talking human being. He had family. He had friends. He had dreams. None of it fucking mattered. He was just a thug who deserved to die. Car horns honk around us. Drivers shout the decision to the rest of the neighborhood. Some kids around my age stand on top of a car as they shout, "Justice for Khalil!" Seven maneuvers around it all and parks in his grandma's driveway. He's silent and unmoving at first. Suddenly he punches the steering wheel.
Fuck!
Devante shakes his head.
This some bullshit.
Fuck!
Seven croaks. He covers his eyes and rocks back and forth.
Fuck! Fuck! Fuck!
I want to cry too. Just can't.
I don't understand, Chris says. He killed Khalil. He should go to prison.
They never do, Kenya mutters. Seven hastily wipes his face.
Fuck this, Star. Whatever you want to do, I'm down. You want to burn some shit up, we'll burn some shit up. Give the word.
Dude, are you crazy?
Chris says. Seven turns around.
You don't get it, so shut up. Star, what you want to do?
Anything. Everything. Scream, cry, puke, hit somebody, burn something, throw something. They gave me the hate, and now I want to fuck everybody, even if I'm not sure how. I want to do something, I say. Protest, riot, I don't care.
Riot?
Chris echoes.
Hell yeah. Devante gives me dap. That's what I'm talking about.
Star, think about this, Chris says. That won't solve anything.
And neither did talking, I snap. I did everything right, and it didn't make a fucking difference. I've gotten death threats, cops harassed my family, somebody shot into my house, all kinds of shit. And for what? Justice Khalil won't get? They don't give a fuck about us, so fine. I no longer give a fuck.
But,
Chris, I don't need you to agree. I say, my throat tight. Just try to understand how I feel. Please. He closes and opens his mouth a couple of times. No response. Seven gets out and holds his seat forward.
Come on, Lyric. Kenya, you staying here or you coming with us?
Staying, Kenya says, her eyes wet from earlier. In case Mama shows up. Seven nods heavily.
Good idea. She'll need somebody.
Lyric climbs off Kenya's lap and runs up the walkway. Kenya hesitates. She looks back at me. I'm sorry, Star, she says. This ain't right. She follows Lyric to the front door, and their grandma lets them inside. Seven returns to the driver's seat.
Chris, you want me to take you home? I'm staying,
Chris nods, as if he's settling with himself.
Yeah, I'm staying. You sure you up for this? Devante asks. It's gonna get wild out here.
I'm sure.
He eyes me. I want everyone to know that decision is bullshit.
He puts his hand on the seat with his palm facing up. I put my hand on his.
Seven cranks up the car and backs out the driveway.
Somebody check Twitter, find out where everything's going down.
I got you.
Devante holds up his phone.
Folks headed to Magnolia. That's where a lot of shit happened last.
He winces and grabs his side.
Are you up for this, Vonte?
Chris asks.
Devante straightens up.
Yeah. I got beat worse than this when I got initiated.
How'd they get you anyway? I ask.
Yeah, Uncle Carlo said you walked off,
says Seven. That's a long-ass walk.
Man.
Devante groans in that Devante way.
I wanted to visit Dalvin, I took the bus to the cemetery. I hate that he by himself in the garden. I didn't want him to be lonely, if that makes sense.
I try not to think about Khalil being alone in Garden Heights, now that Miss Rosalie and Cameron are going to New York with Miss Tammy, and I'm leaving too. It makes sense.
Devante presses the towel against his nose and lip. The bleeding slacked up.
Before I could catch the bus back, King's boy snatched me up. I thought I'd be dead by now, for real.
Well, I'm glad you're not, Chris says. Gives me more time to beat you in Madden.
Devante smirks.
You a crazy-ass white boy if you think that's gonna happen.
Cars are up and down Magnolia like it's a Saturday morning and the dope boys are showing off. Music blasts, horns blare, people hang out car windows, stand on the hoods. The sidewalks are packed. It's hazy out, and flames lick the sky in the distance. I tell Seven to park at Just Us for Justice. The windows are boarded up, and Black Owned is spray-painted across them. Ms. Ofra said they would be leading protests around the city if the grand jury didn't indict. We head down the sidewalk, just walking with no particular place to go. It's more crowded than I realized. About half the neighborhood is out here. I throw my hoodie over my hair and keep my head down. No matter what that grand jury decided, I'm still Star, who was with Khalil, and I don't want to be seen tonight. Just heard. A couple of folks glance at Chris with that, "What the hell is this white boy doing out here?" look. He stuffs his hands in his pockets.
"Guess I'm noticeable, huh?"
he says. "You sure you want to be out here?" I ask.
"This is kind of how it is for you and Seven at Williamson, right?"
"A lot like that," Seven says.
"Then I can deal."
The crowds are too thick. We climb on top of a bus stop bench to get a better view of everything going on. King lords in gray bandanas and garden disciples in green bandanas stand on a police car in the middle of the street chanting, "Justice for Khalil!" People gathered around the car record the scene with their phones and throw rocks at the windows.
"Fuck that cop, bruh,"
a guy says, gripping a baseball bat.
"Killed him over nothing."
He slams the bat into the driver's side window, shattering the glass. It's on. The King Lords and GDs stomp out the front window. Then somebody yells, "Flip that motherfucker!" The gangbangers jump off. People line up on one side of the car. I stare at the lights on the top, remembering the ones that flashed behind me and Khalil, and watch them disappear as they flip the car onto its back. Someone shouts, "Watch out!" A Molotov cocktail sails toward the car. Then, woof! It bursts into flames. The crowd cheers. People say misery loves company, but I think it's like that with anger, too. I'm not the only one pissed. Everyone around me is. They didn't have to be sitting in the passenger seat when it happened. My anger is theirs, and theirs is mine. A car stereo loudly plays a record-scratching sound. Then Ice Cube says,
"Fuck the police, coming straight from the underground. A young nigga got it bad 'cause I'm brown."
You'd think it was a concert the way people react, rapping along and jumping to the beat. Devante and Seven yell out the lyrics. Chris nods along and mumbles the words. He goes silent every time Cube says nigga, as he should. When that hook hits, a collective, "Fuck the police!" thunders off Magnolia Avenue, probably loud enough to reach the heavens. I yell it out, too. Part of me is like, what about Uncle Carlos the cop? But this isn't about him or his co-workers who do their jobs right. This is about 115, those detectives with their bullshit questions, and those cops who made Daddy lie on the ground. Fuck them. Glass shatters. I stop rapping. A block away, people throw rocks and garbage cans at the windows of the McDonald's and the drugstore next to it. One time, I had a really bad asthma attack that put me in the emergency room. My parents and I didn't leave the hospital until like 3 in the morning, and we were starving by then. Mama and I grabbed hamburgers at that McDonald's and ate while Daddy got my prescription from the pharmacy. The glass doors at the drugstore shatter completely. People rush in and eventually come back out with arms full of stuff. Stop! I yell. And others say the same, but looters continue to run in. A glow of orange bursts inside, and all those people rush out. Holy shit, Chris says. In no time, the building is in flames. Hell yeah, says Devante. Burn that bitch down! I remember the look on Daddy's face the day Mr. Wyatt handed him the keys to the grocery store. Mr. Rubin and all those pictures on his walls, showing years and years of a legacy he's built. Ms. Yvette walking into her shop every morning, yawning. Even pain in the ass Mr. Lewis with his top-of-the-line haircuts. Glass shatters at the pawn shop on the next block, then at the beauty supply store near it. Flames pour out both, and people cheer. A new battle cry starts up. The roof, the roof, the roof is on fire. We don't need no water, let that motherfucker burn. I'm just as pissed as anybody, but this isn't it. Not for me. Devante's right there with them, yelling out the new chant. I backhand his arm.
What? He says.
Chris nudges my side.
Guys.
A few blocks away, a line of cops in riot gear march down the street, followed closely by two tanks with bright lights.
This is not a peaceful assembly, an officer on a loudspeaker says. Disperse now or you will be subject to arrest.
The original battle cry starts up again.
Fuck the police! Fuck the police!
People hurl rocks and glass bottles at the cops.
Yo, Seven says.
Stop throwing objects at law enforcement, the officer says. Exit the streets immediately or you will be subject to arrest.
The rocks and bottles continue to fly. Seven hops off the bench.
Come on, he says, as Chris and I climb off too. We need to get out of here.
Fuck the police! Fuck the police!
Devante continues to shout.
Vante, man, come on, says Seven.
I ain't scared of them. Fuck the police!
There's a loud pop. An object sails into the air, lands in the middle of the street, and explodes in a ball of fire.
Oh, shit, Devante says.
He hops off the bench and we run. It's damn near a stampede on the sidewalk. Cars speed away in the street. It sounds like the 4th of July behind us. Pop after pop after pop. Smoke fills the air. More glass shatters. The pops get closer and the smoke thickens. Flames eat away at the cash advance place. Just Us for Justice is fine, though. So is the car wash on the other side of it, black-owned, spray-painted on one of its walls. We hop into Seven's Mustang. He speeds out the back entrance of the old Taco Bell parking lot, hitting the next street over.
The hell just happened, he says.
Chris slumps in his seat.
I don't know. I don't want it to happen again, though.
Niggas tired of taking shit, Devante says between heavy breaths. Like Star said, they don't give a fuck about us, so we don't give a fuck. Burn this bitch down.
But they don't live here, Seven says. They don't give a damn what happens to this neighborhood.
What we supposed to do then? Devante snaps. All that kumbaya peaceful shit clearly don't work.
They don't listen till we tear something up.
Those businesses, though, I say.
What about them? Devante asks. My mama used to work at that McDonald's, and they barely paid her. That pawn shop ripped us off a hell of a lot of times. Nah, I don't give a fuck about neither one of them bitches.
I get it. Daddy almost lost his wedding ring to that pawn shop once. He actually threatened to burn it down. Kinda ironic it's burning now. But if the looters decide to ignore the black-owned tags, they could end up hitting our store. We need to go help Daddy.
What?
Seven says. We need to go help Daddy protect the store. In case looters show up.
Seven wipes his face. Shit, you're probably right. Ain't nobody gonna touch Big Mav, says Devante.
You don't know that, I say. People are pissed, Devante. They're not thinking shit out, they're doing shit. Devante eventually nods.
Aight, fine. Let's go help Big Mav. Think he'll be okay with me helping out?
Chris asks.
He didn't seem to like me last time. Seem to, Devante repeats. He straight up mean mugged your ass. I was there. I remember.
Seven snickers. I smack Devante and tell him, shush.
What? It's true. He was mad as hell that Chris is white. But hey, you spit that NWA shit like you did back there, maybe he'll think you all right.
What?
Surprised a white boy knows NWA?
Chris teases.
Man, you ain't white. You light-skinned.
Agreed, I say.
Wait, wait, Seven says over our laughter. We gotta test him to see if he really is black. Chris, you eat green bean casserole?
Hell no, that shit's disgusting.
The rest of us lose it, saying, he's black! He's black! Wait, one more, I say. Macaroni and cheese. Full meal or a side dish?
Chris's
eyes dart around at us. Devante mimics the Jeopardy music.
How to earn a black card for 300, Alex? Seven says in an announcer's voice.
Chris finally answers.
Full meal.
Ah, the rest of us groan.
Whoop, whoop, whoop,
Devante adds.
Guys, it is. Think about it. You get protein, calcium.
Protein is meat, Devante says. Not no damn cheese. I wish somebody would give me some macaroni, calling it a meal.
It's like the easiest, quickest meal ever, though,
Chris says. One box and you're...
And that's the problem, I say. Real macaroni and cheese doesn't come from a box, babe. It eventually comes from an oven with a crust bubbling on top.
Amen.
Seven holds his fist to me and I bump it.
Oh, Chris says. You mean the kind with the breadcrumbs?
What?
Devante yells, and Seven goes,
breadcrumbs?
Nah. I say, I mean, there's like a crust of cheese on top.
We gotta get you to a soul food restaurant, babe.
This fool said breadcrumbs.
Devante sounds seriously offended.
Breadcrumbs!
The car stops. Up ahead, a road closed sign blocks the street with a cop car in front of it.
Damn, Seven says, backing up and turning around. Gotta find another way to the store.
They probably got a lot of roadblocks around the neighborhood tonight, I tell him.
Fucking breadcrumbs.
Devante still can't get over it.
I swear, I don't understand white people. Breadcrumbs on macaroni, kissing dogs on the mouth,
treating their dogs like they're their kids, I add.
Yeah, says Devante, purposely doing shit that could kill them, like bungee jumping.
Calling Target Tarjay, like that makes it fancier, says Seven.
Fuck, Chris mutters. That's what my mom calls it.
Seven and I bust out laughing.
Saying dumb shit to their parents, Devante continues, splitting up in situations when they clearly need to stick together.
Chris goes,
huh?
Babe, come on, I say. White people always want to split up, and when they do, something bad happens.
That's only in horror movies, though, he says.
Nah, shit like that is always on the news, says Devante. They go on a hiking trip, split up, and a bear kills somebody.
Car breaks down, they split up to find help, and a serial killer murders somebody, Seven adds.
Like, have y'all ever heard that there's power in numbers? Devante asks. For real, though.
Okay, fine, Chris says. Since you guys want to go there with white people, can I ask a question about black people?
Cue the record scratching. No lie, all three of us turn and look at him, including Seven. The car veers off to the side of the road, scraping against the curb. Seven cusses and gets it back on the street.
I mean, it's only fair, Chris mumbles.
Guys, he's right, I say. He should be able to ask.
Fine, says Seven. Go ahead, Chris.
Okay. Why do some black people give their kids odd names? I mean, look at you guys' names. They're not normal.
My name normal, Devante says, all puffed up sounding. I don't know what you're talking about.
Man, you named after a dude from Jodeci, Seven says.
And you named after a number. What's your middle name, 8?
Anyway, Chris, Seven says, Devante's got a point. What makes his name or our names any less normal than yours? Who or what defines normal to you? If my pops were here, he'd say you've fallen into the trap of the white standard.
Color creeps into Chris's neck and face.
I didn't mean... Okay, maybe normal isn't the right word.
Nope, I say.
I guess uncommon is the word instead, he asks. You guys have uncommon names.
I know about 3 other Devantes in the neighborhood, though, says Devante.
Right is about perspective, says Seven. Plus, most of the names white people think are unusual actually have meanings in various African languages.
And let's be real, some white people give their kids uncommon names, too, I say. That's not limited to black people. Just because it doesn't have a D or a la on the front doesn't make it okay.
Chris nods. True enough. Why you have to use D as an example, though? Devante asks.
We stop again. Another roadblock.
Shit. Seven hisses. I gotta go the long way. Through the east side.
East side? Devante says. That's GD territory.
And that's where most of the riots happened last time, I remind them.
Chris shakes his head. Nope. Can't go there, then. Nobody's thinking about gangbanging tonight, Seven says. And as long as I stay away from the major streets, we'll be all right.
Gunshots go off close by. A little too close by. And all of us jump. Chris actually yelps. Seven swallows.
Yeah. We'll be all right.
24. Because Seven said we'd be all right, everything goes wrong. Most of the routes through the east side are blocked off by police, and it takes Seven forever to find one that isn't. About halfway to the store, the car grunts and slows down.
Come on, Seven says.
He rubs the dashboard and pumps the gas.
Come on, baby.
His baby basically says, fuck it, and stops.
Shit.
Seven rests his head on the steering wheel.
We're out of gas.
You're kidding, right? Chris says.
I wish, man. It was low when we left your house, but I thought I could wait a while before I got gas. I know my car.
You obviously don't know shit, I say. We're next to some duplex houses. I don't know what street this is. I'm not familiar with the east side like that. Sirens go off nearby, and it's as hazy and smoky as the rest of the neighborhood.
There's a gas station not too far from here, Seven says. Chris, can you help me push it?
As in, get out the protection of this car and push it? Chris asks.
Yeah, that. It'll be all right. Seven hops out.
That's what you said before, Chris mumbles. But he climbs out.
Devante says, I can push too. Nah, man, you need to rest up, says Seven. Just sit back, Star, get behind the wheel.
This is the first time he's ever let anyone else drive his baby. He tells me to put the car in neutral and guide it with the steering wheel. He pushes next to me. Chris pushes on the passenger side. He constantly glances over his shoulder. The sirens get louder and the smoke thickens. Seven and Chris cough and cover their noses with their shirts. A pickup truck full of mattresses and people speeds by. We reach a slight hill, and Seven and Chris jog to keep up with the car.
Slow down, slow down, Seven yells.
I pump the brakes. The car stops at the bottom of the hill. Seven coughs into his shirt.
Hold on, I need a minute.
I put the car in park. Chris bends over, trying to catch his breath.
The smoke is killing me, he says.
Seven straightens up and slowly blows air out his mouth.
Shit. We'll get to the gas station faster if we leave the car. The two of us can't push it all the way.
The hell? I'm sitting right here. I can push.
I know that, Star. Even if you did, we'll still be faster without it. Damn. I don't want to leave it here, though.
How about we split up? Chris says. Two of us stay here, and two of us go get some gas.
And this is that white people shit you guys were talking about, isn't it?
Yes, the rest of us say.
Told you, says Devante.
Seven folds his hands and rests them on top of his dreads.
Fuck, fuck, fuck!
We gotta leave it. I get Seven's keys, and he grabs a gas can from the trunk. He caresses the car and whispers something to it. I think he says he loves it and promises to come back. Lord. The four of us start down the sidewalk and pull our shirts over our mouths and noses. Devante limps but swears he's all right. A voice in the distance says something I can't make out, and there's a thunderous response, like from a crowd. Chris and I walk behind the other two. His hand falls to his side, and he brushes up against me, his sly way of trying to hold my hand. I let him.
So this is where you used to live? He says.
I forgot this is his first time in Garden Heights.
Yeah,
well, not this side of the neighborhood. I'm from the west side.
West side? Seven says as Devante throws up a W. The best side!
On my mama, Devante adds. I roll my eyes. People go too far with that what side of the neighborhood you from mess. You saw that big apartment complex we passed? Those are the projects we lived in when I was younger. Chris nods.
That place where we parked? Was that the Taco Bell your dad took you and Seven to?
Yeah, they opened a new one closer to the freeway a few years ago.
Maybe we can go there one day, he says. Bruh,
Devante butts in.
Please tell me you ain't considering taking your girl to Taco Bell for a date.
Taco Bell? Seven hollers laughing. Excuse me, was anybody talking to y'all? I ask.
Hey, you my friend, I'm trying to help you out, says Devante. Your boy ain't got no game.
I have game, Chris says.
I'm letting my girl know I'm happy to go with her anywhere, no matter what neighborhood it's in. As long as she's there, I'm good.
He smiles at me without showing his teeth. I do too.
Psh, it's still Taco Bell, says Devante. By the end of the night, it'll be Taco Hell with them bubble guts.
The voice is a bit louder now, not clear yet. A man and a woman run by on the sidewalk, pushing two shopping carts with flat-screen TVs in them.
They wildin' out here, Devante says with a chuckle, but grabs his side. King kicked you, didn't he? Seven says, with those big-ass Tims on, right?
Devante whistles a breath out. He nods.
Yeah, he did that to my mama once. Broke most of her ribs.
A Rottweiler on a leash in a fenced-in yard barks and struggles to come after us. I stomp my foot at it. It squeals and jumps back.
She's all right, Seven says,
though it seems like he's trying to convince himself.
Yeah, she's fine.
A block away, people stand around in a four-way intersection, watching something on one of the other streets.
You need to exit the street,
a voice announces from a loudspeaker.
You are unlawfully blocking traffic.
A hairbrush is not a gun. A hairbrush is not a gun,
a voice chants from another loudspeaker. It's echoed back by a crowd. We get to the intersection. A red, green, and yellow school bus is parked on the street to our right. It says Just Us for Justice on the side. A large crowd is gathered in the street to our left. They point black hairbrushes into the air. The protesters are on Carnation, where it happened. I haven't been back here since that night. Knowing this is where Khalil, I stare too hard. The crowd disappears, and I see him lying in the street. The whole thing plays out before my eyes like a horror movie on repeat. He looks at me for the last time and...
A hairbrush is not a gun,
the voice snaps me from my daze. Ahead of the crowd, a lady with twists stands on top of a police car, holding a bullhorn. She turns toward us, her fist raised for black power. Khalil smiles on the front of her t-shirt.
Ain't that your attorney, Star?
Seven asks.
Yeah.
Now, I knew Miss Ofra was about that radical life. But when you think attorney, you don't really think person standing on a police car with a bullhorn, you know?
Disperse immediately, the officer repeats.
I can't see him for the crowd. Miss Ofra leads the chant again.
A hairbrush is not a gun. A hairbrush is not a gun.
It's contagious and echoes all around us. Seven, Devante, and Chris join in. A hairbrush is not a gun, I mutter. Khalil drops it into the side of the door. A hairbrush is not a gun. He opens the door to ask if I'm okay. Then pow, pow.
A hairbrush is not a gun!
I scream loud as I can, fist high in the air, tears in my eyes.
I'm going to invite Sister Freeman to come up and give a word about the injustice that took place tonight, Miss Ofra says.
She hands the bullhorn to a lady who's also in a Khalil shirt, and she hops off the patrol car. The crowd lets her through, and Miss Ofra heads toward another co-worker who's standing near the bus at the intersection. She spots me and does a double take.
Star, she says, making her way over. What are you doing out here?
When they announced the decision, I wanted to do something. So we came to the neighborhood. She eyes beat up Devante.
Oh my God, did you get caught in the riots?
Devante touches his face.
Damn, I look that bad?
That's not why he looks like that, I tell her. But we did get caught in the riots on Magnolia. It got crazy over there. Looters took over.
Miss Ofra purses her lips. Yeah, we heard. Just us for justice was fine when we left, Seven says.
Even if it's not, it's okay, says Miss Ofra. You can destroy wood and brick, but you can't destroy a movement. Star, does your mother know you're out here?
Yeah. Don't even sound convincing to myself.
Really?
Okay, no. Please don't tell her.
I have to, she says. As your attorney, I have to do what's in your best interest. Your mom, knowing you're out here, is in your best interest.
No, it's not, 'cause she'll kill me. But you're my attorney, not hers. Can't this be a client confidentiality thing?
Star.
Please? During the other protests, I watched and talked, so now I want to do something.
Who said talking isn't doing something? She says. It's more productive than silence. Remember what I told you about your voice?
You said it's my biggest weapon.
And I mean that.
She stares at me a second, then sighs out her nose.
You want to fight the system tonight?
I nod.
Come on, then.
Miss Ofra takes my hand and leads me through the crowd.
Fire me, she says.
Huh?
Tell me you no longer want me to represent you.
I no longer want you to represent me? I ask.
Good. As of now, I'm not your attorney, so if your parents find out about this, I didn't do it as your attorney, but as an activist. You saw that bus near the intersection?
Yeah.
If the officers react, run straight to it. Got it?
But what? She takes me to the patrol car and motions at her colleague. The lady climbs off and hands Miss Ofra the bullhorn. Miss Ofra passes it over to me.
Use your weapon, she says.
Another one of her co-workers lifts me and sets me on top of the cop car. About 10 feet away, there's a shrine for Khalil in the middle of the street. Lit candles, teddy bears, framed pictures, and balloons. It separates the protesters from a cluster of officers in riot gear. It's not nearly as many cops as it was on Magnolia, but still, they're cops. I turn toward the crowd. They watch me expectantly. The bullhorn is as heavy as a gun. Ironic, since Miss Ofra said to use my weapon. I have the hardest time lifting it. Shit. I have no idea what to say. I put it near my mouth and press the button.
My!
It makes a loud, ear-splitting noise.
Don't be scared, somebody in the crowd yells. Speak! You need to exit the street immediately, the cop says.
You know what? Fuck it.
My name is Star. I'm the one who saw what happened to Khalil, I say into the bullhorn. And it wasn't right.
I get a bunch of yes and amens from the crowd.
We weren't doing anything wrong. Not only did Officer Cruz assume we were up to no good, he assumed we were criminals. Well, Officer Cruz is the criminal.
The crowd cheers and claps. Miss Ofra says, speak. That amps me up. I turn to the cops.
I'm sick of this. Just like y'all think all of us are bad because of some people, we think the same about y'all. Until you give us a reason to think otherwise, we'll keep protesting.
More cheers. And I can't lie, it eggs me on. Forget trigger happy. Speaker happy is more my thing.
Everybody wants to talk about how Khalil died, I say. But this isn't about how Khalil died. It's about the fact that he lived. His life mattered. Khalil lived.
I look at the cops again.
You hear me? Khalil lived. You have until the count of three to disperse,
the officer on the loudspeaker says.
Khalil lived, we chant. One. Khalil lived.
2.
Khalil lived!
3.
Khalil lived!
The can of tear gas sails toward us from the cops. It lands beside the patrol car. I jump off and pick up the can. Smoke whizzes out the end of it. Any second, it'll combust. I scream at the top of my lungs, hoping Khalil hears me, and chuck it back at the cops. It explodes and consumes them in a cloud of tear gas. All hell breaks loose. The cops stampede over Khalil's shrine, and the crowd runs. Someone grabs my arm, Ms. Ofra.
Go to the bus, she says.
I get about halfway there when Chris and Seven catch me.
Come on,
Seven says, and they pull me with them. I try to tell them about the bus, but explosions go off and thick white smoke engulfs us. My nose and throat burn as if I swallowed fire. My eyes feel like flames lick them. Something whizzes overhead. Then an explosion goes off in front of us. More smoke.
Devante,
Chris croaks, looking around.
Devante!
We find him leaning against a flickering streetlight. He coughs and heaves. Seven lets me go and grabs him by the arm.
Shit, man, my eyes, I can't breathe.
We run. Chris grips my hand as tight as I grip his. There are screams and loud pops in every direction. Can't see a thing for the smoke, not even the Just Us bus.
I can't run. My side, Devante says. Shit! Come on, man,
Seven says, pulling him.
Keep going.
Bright lights barrel down the street through the smoke. A gray pickup truck on oversized wheels. It stops beside us, the window rolls down, and my heart stops, waiting for the gun to come pointing out, courtesy of a King Lord. But Goon, the Cedar Grove King Lord with the ponytails, looks at us from the driver's seat, a gray bandana over his nose and mouth.
Get in the back, he says.
Two guys and a girl around our age, wearing white bandanas on their faces, help us into the back of the truck. It's an open invitation and other people climb in, like this white man in a shirt and tie, and a Latino holding a camera on his shoulder. The white man looks oddly familiar. Goon drives off. Devante lies in the bed of the truck. He holds his eyes and rolls in agony.
Shit, man, shit.
Bree, get him some milk,
Goon says through the back window.
Milk?
We're out, Unc,
says the girl in the bandana.
Fuck,
Goon hisses. Hold on, Vante.
Tears and snot drip down my face. My eyes are damn near numb from burning. The truck slows down.
Get little homie, Goon says.
The two guys in the bandanas grab some kid on the street by his arms and lift him into the truck. The kid looks around 13. His shirt is covered in soot, and he coughs and heaves. I get into a coughing fit. Snorting is like hacking up hot coals. The man in the shirt and tie hands me his dampened handkerchief.
It'll help some, he says. Put it against your nose and breathe through it.
It gives me a small amount of clean air. I pass it to Chris. He uses it. Passes it to Seven beside him. Seven uses it and passes it to someone else.
As you can see, Jim, the man says, looking at the camera, there are a lot of youth out here protesting tonight, black and white.
I'm the token, huh? Chris mutters to me before coughing. I'd laugh if it didn't hurt.
And you have people like this gentleman, going around the neighborhood, helping out where they can,
the white man says.
Driver, what's your name?
The Latino turns the camera toward Goon.
Nanya, Goon says. Thank you, Nanya, for giving us a ride.
Wow. I realize why he looks familiar, though. He's a national news anchor. Brian somebody.
This young lady here made a powerful statement earlier, he says,
and the camera points toward me.
Are you really the witness?
I nod. No point hiding anymore.
We caught what you said back there. Anything else you'd like to add for our viewers?
Yeah.
None of this makes sense.
I start coughing again. He leaves me alone. When my eyes aren't closed, I see what my neighborhood has become. More tanks, more cops in riot gear, more smoke. Businesses ransacked. Streetlights are out, and fires keep everything from being in complete darkness. People run out of the Walmart and carry armfuls of items, looking like ants rushing from an anthill. The untouched businesses have boarded up windows and graffiti that says Black Owned. We eventually turn onto Marigold Avenue, and even with the fire in my lungs, I take a deep breath. Our store is in one piece. The windows are boarded up with that same Black Owned tag on them, like it's lamb's blood protecting the store from the plague of death. The street is pretty still. Top Shelf Spirits and Wine is the only business with broken windows. It doesn't have a Black-owned tag, either. Goon stops in front of our store. He jumps out, comes to the back of the truck, and helps everyone out. Star, Sev, y'all got a key? I pat my pockets for Seven's keys and toss them to Goon. He tries each key until one unlocks the door. In here, y'all, he says. Everyone, including the cameraman and reporter, go in the store. Goon and one of the guys in the bandana get Devante and carry him inside. No sign of Daddy. I crawl onto the floor and fall on my stomach, blinking fast. My eyes burn and fill with tears. Goon sets Devante on the old people's bench before running toward the refrigerator. He rushes back with a gallon of milk and pours it into Devante's face. The milk momentarily turns him white. Devante coughs and sputters. Goon pours more.
Stop, Devante says. You about to drown me. I bet your eyes ain't hurt no more, though, Goon replies.
I half crawl, half run to the refrigerators and get a gallon for myself. I pour it on my face. The relief comes in seconds. People pour milk onto their faces while the cameraman records it all. An older lady drinks from a gallon. Milk pools on the floor, and a college-aged guy lies face down in it and gasps for air. When people get the relief they need, they leave. Goon grabs a bunch of cartons of milk and asks,
Hey, can we take this in case somebody needs it on the street?
Seven nods and sips from a carton.
Thanks, little homie. If I see your pops again, I'll tell him y'all here.
You saw our... I cough and sip some milk, dousing the flames in my lungs. You saw our dad?
Yeah, a little while ago. He was looking for y'all.
Oh, shit. Sir, the reporter says to Goon,
can we ride along? We'd like to see more of the neighborhood. Ain't no thing, homie. Hop in the back.
He turns to the camera and twists his fingers so they resemble a K and an L.
See the Grove Kings, baby. Crowns up. Adio.
He gives the King Lord call. Leave it to Goon to throw gang signs on live TV. They leave us alone in the store. Seven, Chris, and I are in the pool of milk with our knees up to our chests. Devante's arms and legs dangle off the old people's bench. He chugs back some milk. Seven takes his phone from his pocket.
Damn, my phone's dead. Star, you got yours?
Yeah, I have way too many voicemails and way too many texts, most of them from Mama. I play the voicemails first. They start out safe enough with Mama saying, Star, baby, call me as soon as you get this, okay? But they soon become, Star, Amara, I know you're getting these messages. Call me. I'm not playing. They progress to, See, you've taken this too far. Carlos and I are heading out the door right now, and you better pray to God we don't find you. And on the last message left a few minutes ago, Mama says, Oh, so you can't return my calls, but you can lead protests, huh?
Mama told me she saw you on live TV giving speeches and throwing tear gas at cops. I swear I'm gonna snatch your life if you don't call me.
We in deep shit, man, Devante says. Deep shit.
Seven glances at his watch.
Damn, we been gone about 4 hours.
Deep shit, Devante repeats.
Maybe the four of us can get a place in Mexico, says Chris.
I shake my head. Not far enough for our mom.
Seven picks at his face. The milk has dried and formed a crust.
All right, we need to call them. And if we call from the office phone, Ma will see it on the caller ID and know we're not lying when we say we're here. That'll help, right?
We're at least 3 hours too late for any help, I say.
Seven stands and gives me and Chris a hand up. He helps Devante off the bench.
Come on, make sure y'all sound remorseful, all right?
We head for Daddy's office. The front door creaks. Something thuds onto the floor. I turn around. A glass bottle with flaming cloth.
Woof!
The store is suddenly lit bright orange. A heat wave hits like the sun dropped in. Flames lick the ceiling and block the door. 25. An entire aisle is already engulfed.
The back door, Seven says, choked up. The back door!
Chris and Devante follow us down the narrow hall near Daddy's office. It leads to the restroom and the back door where deliveries are unloaded. Smoke's already filling the hall. Seven pushes the door. It doesn't budge. He and Chris ram their shoulders against it, but it's bulletproof, shoulder-proof, everything-proof. The burglar bars won't let us out anyway.
Star, my keys, Seven croaks.
I shake my head. I gave them to Goon. And the last time I saw them, he left them in the front door. Devante coughs. It's getting harder to breathe with all the smoke.
Man, we can't die up in here. I don't want to die.
Shut up, Chris says. We're not gonna die. I cough into the crook of my arm. Daddy may have a spare, I say, and my voice is thin. In his office.
We rush back down the hall, but the office door is locked too.
Fuck! Seven screams.
Mr. Lewis limps into the middle of the street. He grips a baseball bat in each hand. He glances around like he's trying to figure out where the smoke is coming from. With the boards on the windows, he can't see the inferno in the store unless he looks through the front door.
Mr. Lewis!
I scream as loud as I can. The guys join in. The smoke strangles our voices. The flames dance feet away, but I swear it's like I'm standing in them. Mr. Lewis limps toward the store, squinting his eyes. They widen as he looks in through the door, straight at us on the other side of the flames.
Oh, Lord!
He limps into the street faster than I've ever seen him move.
Help! These kids stuck up in here! Help!
There's a loud crackling to our right. The fire takes out another shelf. Mr. Rubin's nephew, Tim, runs over and opens the front door, but the flames are too much.
Go to the back door, he calls to us.
Tim almost beats us getting there. He yanks hard on the door and the glass rattles. The way he's pulling, the door will come off eventually. We don't have eventually time, though. Tires screech outside. Moments later, Daddy runs up to the back door.
Watch out, he tells Tim, moving him out the way.
Daddy fumbles for his keys and sticks several in the lock while muttering, please, God, please. I can barely see Seven, Chris, or Devante for all the smoke, and they're coughing and wheezing next to me. A click. The knob turns. The door flies open. We rush out. Fresh air fills my lungs. Daddy pulls me and Seven through the alley around the corner and across the street to Reuben's. Tim gets Devante and Chris. They make us sit on the sidewalk. Tires screech again, and Mama goes, "Oh, my God!" She runs over, Uncle Carlos on her heels. She holds my shoulders and helps me lie on the sidewalk. "Breathe, baby," she says. "Breathe." But I have to see. I sit up. Daddy attempts to run into the store for God knows what. The flames swat him back. Tim rushes a bucket of water from his uncle's restaurant. He runs into our store and douses it on the flames, but he's forced to jump back too. People trickle onto the street, and more buckets of sloshing water are hauled into the store. Ms. Yvette carries one from her beauty shop. Tim tosses it onto the fire. Flames eat away at the roof, and smoke billows from the windows of the barbershop next door.
"My shop!"
Mr. Lewis cries. Mr. Reuben stops him from running toward it.
"My shop!"
Daddy stands in the middle of the street, breathing hard, looking helpless. A crowd has gathered, and people watch with their hands pressed to their mouths. Bass rattles nearby. Daddy slowly turns his head. The gray BMW is parked in the intersection near the liquor store. King leans up against it. Some other King Lords stand alongside him and sit on the hood of the car. They laugh and point. King stares straight at Daddy and takes out his cigarette lighter. He sparks a flame. Aisha said King was gonna fuck us up because I dry snitched. That meant my whole family. This is it.
"You son of a bitch!"
Daddy marches toward King, and King's boys advance toward Daddy. Uncle Carlos stops him. The King Lords reach for their pieces and tell Daddy to bring it. King laughs like it's a comedy show.
"You think this shit funny?" Daddy yells. "Punk ass! Always hiding behind your boys."
King stops laughing.
"Yeah, I said it. I ain't scared of you. You ain't shit to be scared of. Trying to burn up some kids, you fucking coward."
Mama starts for King, and Uncle Carlos has to work overtime to hold her back, too.
"He burned Maverick's store down,"
Mr. Lewis announces to everybody, in case we didn't hear.
"King burned Maverick's store down!"
It bubbles around the crowd, and narrowed eyes set on King. Of course, that's when the cops and the fire truck decide to show up. Of course, because that's how it works in Garden Heights. Uncle Carlos convinces my parents to back away. King lifts his cigar to his lips, eyes gleaming. I want to get one of Mr. Lewis's baseball bats and knock him upside his head. The firefighters get to work. The cops order the crowd to back up. King and his boys are really amused now. Shit, it's like the cops are helping them out.
"You need to be getting them," Mr. Lewis says. "They the ones who started the fire."
"That old man don't know what he talking about," King says. "All this smoke done got to him."
Mr. Lewis starts to charge at King, and an officer has to hold him back.
"I ain't crazy. You did start it. Everybody know it."
King's face twitches.
"You better watch yourself. Lying on folks."
Daddy glances back at me, and there's this expression on his face that I've never seen before. He turns around to the cop who's holding Mr. Lewis and says,
"He ain't lying. King did start it, officer."
Holy shit. Daddy snitched.
"It's my store," he says. "I know he started the fire."
"Did you see him do it?" the cop asks. "No, that's the problem. We know King did it, but if nobody saw it..."
"I saw him,"
Mr. Reuben says.
"He did it."
"I saw him too," Tim says.
"So did I,"
Ms. Yvette adds. And shit, now the crowd is echoing the same thing, pointing at King and his boys. I mean, everybody snitching. The rules no fucking longer apply. King reaches for his car door. but some of the officers draw their guns and order him and his boys to the ground. An ambulance arrives. Mama tells them about our smoke inhalation. I snitch and tell them about Devante, although his black eye makes it obvious he needs help. They let the four of us sit on the curb, and they put oxygen masks on us. I thought I wasn't that bad anymore, but I forgot how nice clean air is. I've been breathing in smoke since I got to Garden Heights. They look at Devante's side. It's purple looking, and they tell him he'll need to go in for x-rays. He doesn't want to go in the ambulance, and Mama assures the paramedics that she'll take him in herself. I rest my head on Chris's shoulder as we hold hands, oxygen masks on both of us. I'm not going to lie and say tonight was better because he was here. Frankly, this has been one fucked up night. Nothing could make it better. But it doesn't hurt that we went through it together. My parents come our way. Daddy's lips thin, and he mumbles something to Mama. She elbows him and says, "Be nice." She sits between Chris and Seven. Daddy hovers over me and Chris at first, as if he's expecting us to make room for him. "Maverick," Mama says.
Aight.
He sits on the other side of me. We watch the firefighters put out the flames. No point, though. They're only saving a shell of the store. Daddy sighs, rubbing his bald head.
"Damn, man."
My heart aches. We're losing a family member for real. I've spent most of my life in that store. I move my head off Chris and rest it on Daddy's shoulder. He puts his arm around me and kisses my hair. I don't miss that smug look that crosses his face. Petty.
"Wait a minute." He pulls away. "Where the hell y'all been?"
"That's what I want to know," Mama says, acting like you can't answer my texts or calls. "Really? Seven and I almost died in a fire. And they're mad because we didn't call them?" I lift my mask and say, "Long night." "Oh, I'm sure it was," Mama says. "We got ourselves a little radical, Maverick. All on the news, throwing tear gas at the cops." "After they threw it at us," I point out.
"What?"
Daddy says, but in that impressed way. Mama cuts him a side eye and he says in a more stern tone,
"I mean, what? What you do that for?"
"I was mad." I fold my arms onto my knees and stare at my Tims through the gap. "That decision wasn't right." Daddy puts his arm around me again and rests his head against mine. A daddy snuggle.
"Nah," he says, "it wasn't."
"Hey," Mama beckons me to look at her. "The decision may not have been right, but it's not your fault. Remember what I said? Sometimes things will go wrong, but the key is to keep doing right." My eyes drift to my Tims again. Khalil still deserved better than that.
"Yeah."
Her voice thickens.
"He did."
Daddy looks past me at my boyfriend.
"So, plain as Chris."
Seven snorts, Devante snickers, Mama goes, "Maverick," as I say, "Daddy."
"At least it's not white boy," Chris says.
"Exactly," Daddy says. "It's a step up. You gotta earn my tolerance in increments if you gonna date my daughter."
"Lord," Mama rolls her eyes. "Chris, baby, you've been out here all night?" The way she says it, I can't help but laugh. She's basically asking him, "You do realize you're in the hood, right?"
"Yes, ma'am," Chris says. "All night."
Daddy grunts.
"Maybe you do got some balls then."
My mouth drops and Mama says, "Maverick Carter." Seven and Devante crack up. But Chris says,
Yes, sir. I'd like to think I do.
Damn, says Seven.
He reaches to give Chris dap, but Daddy cuts him a hard eye, and he pulls his hand back.
Aight, plain ass Chris, Daddy says. Boxing gym, next Saturday. You and me.
Chris lifts his oxygen mask so fast.
I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said, calm down, I'm not gonna fight you, Daddy says. We gonna train. Get to know each other. You've been seeing my daughter for a minute now. I gotta know you, and you can learn a lot about a man at a boxing gym.
Oh. Chris's shoulders relax.
Okay.
He puts the oxygen mask back on. Daddy grins. It's a little too mischievous for my liking. He's gonna kill my poor boyfriend. The cops load King and his boys into patrol cars, and the crowd claps and cheers. Finally, something to celebrate tonight. Uncle Carlo strolls over. He's got on a wife beater and shorts, which is so not Uncle Carlo's. Yet something about him still looks detective-y. He's been in cop mode since his colleagues arrived. Uncle Carlos gives this old man grunt as he lowers himself onto the sidewalk next to Devante. He grabs the back of Devante's neck, the same way Daddy grabs Seven's. Man hugs, I call them.
I'm glad you're safe, kid, he says. Even if you do look like a truck ran over you twice. You not mad I left without telling y'all? Of course I'm mad. I'm actually pissed. But I'm happier that you're safe. Now my mom and Pam, that's a whole different story. I can't save you from their wrath.
Are you putting me out?
No. You're grounded, probably for the rest of your life, but that's only because we love you.
Devante cracks a smile. Uncle Carlos pats his knees.
So, thanks to all these witnesses, we should get King for arson.
Oh, for real? Daddy says.
Yep, it's a start, but not really enough. He'll be out by the end of the week.
And back to the same old shit, with targets this time.
If y'all knew where King's stash was, Devante says, would that help?
Uncle Carlos says,
probably, yeah. If somebody agreed to rat on him, would that help?
Uncle Carlos turns completely toward him.
Are you saying you want to turn witness? I mean,
Devante pauses.
Will it help Kenya, her mama, and her sister? If King went to jail, says Seven, yeah, a lot. It'll help the whole neighborhood, honestly,
Daddy says.
And I'll be protected? Devante asks Uncle Carlos. Absolutely, I promise.
And Uncle Carlos always keeps his promises, I say. Devante nods for a moment.
Then I guess I will turn witness.
Holy shit, again. You sure about that? I ask.
Yeah. After seeing you face those cops the way you did, I don't know, man. That did something to me, he says. And that lady said our voices are weapons. I should use mine, right?
So you're willing to become a snitch, Chris says.
On King, Seven adds.
Devante shrugs.
I already need the stitches. Might as well snitch.
26. It's around 11 the next morning, and I'm still in bed. After the longest night ever, I had to seriously get reacquainted with my pillow. My mom flicks on the lights in my new room. Good Lord, there's too many lights in here. Star, your partner in crime is on the phone, she says. Who? I mumble. Your protest partner in crime. Mama told me she saw her hand you that bullhorn on TV, putting you in danger like that. But she didn't mean to put me in, oh, I've dealt with her already, don't worry. Here. She wants to apologize to you. Miss Ofra does apologize for putting me in a bad situation and for the way things turned out with Khalil, but she says she's proud of me. She also says she thinks I have a future in activism. Mama leaves with the phone, and I turn onto my side. Tupac stares back at me from a poster, a smirk on his face. The Thug Life tattoo on his stomach looks bolder than the rest of the photo. It was the first thing I put in my new room, kind of like bringing Khalil with me. He said Thug Life stood for the hate you give little infants fucks everybody. We did all that stuff last night because we were pissed, and it fucked all of us. Now we have to somehow unfuck everybody. I sit up and grab my phone off my nightstand. There are texts from Maya, who saw me on the news and thinks I'm dope personified, and texts from Chris. His parents grounded him, but he says it was so worth it, it really was. There's another text from Haley, of all people. Two simple words. I'm sorry. Not what I expected. Not that I expected to get anything from her. Not that I even want to deal with her. This is the first time she's spoken to me since our fight. I'm not complaining. She's been non-existent to me, too. I respond anyway. Sorry for what? I'm not being petty. Petty would be saying, new number, who dis? There's a damn near endless list of things she could be apologizing for. About the decision, she says. And that you're upset with me. Haven't been myself lately. Just want everything to be how it used to be. The sympathy for the case is nice, but she's sorry I'm upset? That's not the same as apologizing for her actions or the garbage she said. She's sorry I reacted the way I did. Oddly enough, I needed to know that. You see, it's like my mom said, if the good outweighs the bad, I should keep Haley as a friend. There's a shit ton of bad now, an overload of bad. I hate to admit that a teeny tiny part of me hoped Haley would see how wrong she was. But she hasn't. She may not ever see that. And you know what? That's fine. Okay. Maybe not fine, because it makes her a shitty-ass person. But I don't have to wait around for her to change. I can let go. I reply. Things will never be the way they used to be. I hit send, wait for the text to go through, and delete the conversation. I delete Haley's number from my phone, too. I stretch and yawn as I creep down the hall. The layout of our new house is way different than our old one, but I think I can get used to it. Daddy clips some roses at the kitchen counter. Next to him, Sakani inhales a sandwich, and Bricks stands on his hind legs with his paws on Sakani's lap. He watches the sandwich the same way he watches a squirrel. Mama flips switches on the wall. One causes a grinding noise in the sink, and another turns the lights off and on. Too many switches, she mumbles and notices me. Oh, look, Maverick. It's our little revolutionary. Brick scuttles over to me and jumps up my legs, tongue wagging. Morning, I tell him, and scratch behind his ears. He gets down and returns to Sakani and the sandwich.
Do me a favor, Star, Seven says, searching through a box that has kitchen stuff written on it in my handwriting. Next time, be more specific about what type of kitchen stuff is in the box. I've gone through three trying to find plates.
I climb onto a stool at the counter. Lazy butt, isn't that what paper towels are for? Seven narrows his eyes.
Hey, Pops, guess where I picked Star up from yesterday?
The plates are in the bottom of that box, I say.
Thought so.
My middle finger wants to extend so bad. Daddy says,
you bet not have been at that boy's house. I know that.
I force a smile. No, of course not. I'm gonna kill Seven. Daddy sucks his teeth.
Uh-huh.
He goes back to work on his roses. An entire bush lies on the counter. The roses are dry, and some of the petals have fallen off. Daddy sets the bush in a clay pot and pours dirt over the roots.
Will they be all right? I ask.
Yeah. A little damaged, but alive. I'm gonna try something different with them. Putting them in new soil can be like hitting a reset button.
Star, Sikani says, mouth full of wet bread and meat.
Nasty.
You're in the newspaper. Stop talking with your mouth full, boy, Mama scolds. Daddy nods toward the newspaper on the counter.
Yeah, check it out, little Black Panther.
I'm on the front page. The photographer caught me mid-throw. The can of tear gas smokes in my hand. The headline reads, "The Witness Fights Back." Mama rests her chin on my shoulder. They've discussed you on every news show this morning. Your Nana calls every 5 minutes, telling us a new channel to watch. She kisses my cheek. I know you better not scare me like that again.
I won't. What are they saying on the news?
They calling you brave, Daddy says. But you know, that one network got a complaint saying you put them cops in danger.
I didn't have a problem with those cops. I had a problem with that tear gas can, and they threw it first.
I know, baby. Don't even stress it. That whole network can kiss my...
Dollar Daddy,
Sikani grins up at him.
Roses. They can kiss my roses.
He smudges dirt on Sikani's nose.
You ain't getting another dollar out of me.
He knows, Seven says, glaring at Sikani. Sikani gets guilty puppy dog eyes that could give Bricks some competition. Mama moves her chin off my shoulder.
Okay, what's that about?
Nothing. I told Sikani we gotta be careful with money now.
He said we might have to go back to Garden Heights, too, Sikani rats. Do we?
No, of course not, Mama says. Guys, we'll make this work.
Exactly, Daddy says. If I have to sell oranges on the side of the street like the Nation Brothers, we'll make it.
Is it okay to leave, though? I ask. I mean, the neighborhood is messed up. What are people going to think about us leaving instead of helping fix it? Never, ever thought I'd say something like that. But last night has me thinking about all of this so differently. About me differently. About Garden Heights differently.
We can still help fix it, Daddy says.
Right. I'm going to do extra shifts at the clinic, Mama says.
And I'm going to figure something out to do about the store till I get it renovated, says Daddy. We ain't gotta live there to change things, baby. We just gotta give a damn, aight?
All right. Mama kisses my cheek and runs a hand over my hair. Look at you. Community-minded all of a sudden. Maverick, what time did the claims agent say he was coming? Daddy closes his eyes and pinches the space between them.
In a couple of hours. I don't even want to see it.
It's okay, Daddy, Sikani says, with a mouthful of sandwich. You don't have to go by yourself. We'll go with you. So we do. Two police cars block off the entrance to Garden Heights. Daddy shows them his ID and explains why we need to go in. I'm able to breathe during the whole exchange, and they let us through.
Damn. I see why they aren't letting people in, though.
Smoke has taken up permanent residence, and glass and all kinds of trash litter the streets. We pass so many blackened frames of what used to be businesses. The store is the hardest to see. The burned roof folds into itself like the slightest wind will knock it over. The bricks and burglar bars protect charred rubble. Mr. Lewis sweeps the sidewalk in front of his shop. It's not as bad off as the store, but a broom and a dustpan won't make it better. Daddy parks in front of the store and we get out. Mama rubs and squeezes Daddy's shoulder.
Star, Sekani whispers and looks back at me. The store.
His eyes have tears in them, and then mine do too. I drape my arms over his shoulders and hug him to me. I know, man. A loud creaking sound approaches, and somebody whistles a tune. 40-ounce pushes his shopping cart down the sidewalk. As hot as it is, he's wearing his camouflage coat. He comes to an abrupt stop in front of the store like he just noticed it.
Goddamn, Maverick,
he says in that fast 40-ounce way where it all sounds like one word.
What the hell happened?
Man, where were you last night? Daddy says. My store got burned up.
I went on the other side of the freeway. Couldn't stay here. Oh, no, I knew these fools would go crazy. You got insurance? I hope you do. I got insurance.
What for? I ask. Because seriously.
My life,
he says, like it's obvious.
You gonna rebuild, Maverick?
I don't know, man. I gotta think about it.
You have to, because now we won't have no store. Everybody else gonna leave and never come back.
I'll think about it.
Okay. If you need anything, let me know.
And he pushes his cart down the sidewalk, but comes to an abrupt stop again.
The liquor store gone too? Oh, no!
I snicker. Only 40 ounce. Mr. Lewis limps over with his broom.
That fool got a point. Folks will need a store around here. Everybody else gonna leave.
I know, Daddy says. It's a lot, Mr. Lewis.
I know it is, but you can handle it. I told Clarence what happened.
He says of Mr. Wyatt, his friend who used to own the store.
He thinks you ought to stick around. And we were talking, and I think it's about time for me to do like him. Sit on a beach and watch some pretty women.
You're closing the shop? Seven asks.
Who's gonna cut my hair? Sekani adds. Mr. Lewis looks down at him.
Not my problem. Since you're gonna be the only store around here, Maverick, you'll need more space when you rebuild. I want to give you the shop.
What? Mama sputters.
Whoa, now wait a minute, Mr. Lewis,
Daddy says.
Wait, nothing, I got insurance, and I'm gonna get more than enough from that. Ain't nothing I can do with a burned up shop. You can build a nice store, give folks something to be proud to shop in. All I ask is that you put up some pictures of Dr. Kang alongside your Nui, whoever he was.
Daddy chuckles.
Huey Newton.
Yeah, him. I know y'all moving, and I'm glad. But the neighborhood still needs more men like you, even if you just run in a store.
The insurance man arrives a little later, and Daddy gives him a tour of what's left. Mama gets some gloves and garbage bags from the truck, passes them to me and my brothers, and tells us to get to work. It's kind of hard with people driving by and honking their horns. They yell out stuff like, "Keep y'all heads up," or "We got your back." Some of them come and help out, like Mrs. Rooks and Tim. Mr. Reuben brings us ice-cold bottles of water, 'cause this sun ain't no joke. I sit on the curb, sweating, tired, and 100% ready to be done. We aren't anywhere near finished. A shadow casts over me and somebody says, "Hey." I shield my eyes as I look up. Kenya's wearing an oversized t-shirt and some basketball shorts. They look like Seven's. "Hey." She sits next to me and pulls her knees up to her chest. "I saw you on TV," she says. "I told you to speak out, but damn, Star, you took it kind of far." "It got people talking, though, didn't it?"
"Yeah. Sorry about the store. I heard my daddy did it."
"He did. No point in denying it, shoot. How's your mama?" Kenya pulls her knees closer. "He beat her. She ended up in the hospital. They kept her overnight. She got a concussion and a whole bunch of other stuff, but she'll be okay. We saw her a little while ago. The cops came, and we had to leave.
Really?
Yeah. They raided our house earlier and wanted to ask her some questions. Me and Lyric gotta stay with Grandma right now.
Devante struck already.
You okay with that?
I'm relieved, actually.
Messed up, huh?
Nah, not really.
She scratches one of her cornrows, which somehow makes all of them move in the same back and forth motion.
I'm sorry for calling Seven my brother and not our brother.
Oh, I kind of forgot about that. It seems minor after everything that's happened. It's all right.
I guess I called him my brother 'cause it made me feel like he really was my brother, you know?
He is your brother, Kenya. I honestly get jealous of how much he wants to be with you and Lyric.
Because he thinks he has to be, she says. He wants to be with y'all. I mean, I get why. He and Daddy don't get along. But I wish he wanted to be my brother sometimes and didn't feel like he had to be. He ashamed of us. 'Cause of our mama and my daddy.
No, he's not.
Yeah, he is. You ashamed of me, too.
I've never said that.
You didn't have to, Star, she says. You never invited me to hang out with you and them girls. They were never at your house when I was. Like you ain't want them to know I was your friend, too. You were ashamed of me. Khalil, even the garden, and you know it.
I go quiet. If I face the truth, as ugly as it is, she's right. I was ashamed of Garden Heights and everything in it. It seems stupid now, though. I can't change where I come from or what I've been through. So why should I be ashamed of what makes me me? That's like being ashamed of myself. Nah, fuck that. Maybe I was ashamed, I admit. But I'm not anymore. And Seven's not ashamed of you, your mama, or Lyric. He loves y'all, Kenya. So like I said, our brother, not just mine. Trust, I'm more than happy to share if it means getting him off my back. He can be a pain in the ass, can he?
Girl, yes.
We laugh together. As much as I've lost, I've gained some good stuff, too. Like Kenya.
Yeah, all right, she says. I guess we can share him.
Chop, chop, Star, Mama calls, clapping her hands as if that'll make me move faster. Still on her dictatorship, I swear.
We've got work to do, Kenya. I got a bag and some gloves with your name on them if you want to help out.
Kenya turns to me like, seriously?
I can share her too, I say. Matter of fact, please take her.
We laugh and stand up. Kenya glances around at the rubble. More neighbors have joined in on cleaning up, and they form a line that moves trash out the store and into the trash cans on the curb.
So what y'all gonna do now? Kenya asks. With the store, I mean.
A car honks at us, and the driver yells out to let us know he has our back. The answer comes easily. We'll rebuild. Once upon a time, there was a hazel-eyed boy with dimples. I called him Khalil. The world called him a thug. He lived, but not nearly long enough. And for the rest of my life, I'll remember how he died. Fairy tale? No. But I'm not giving up on a better ending. It would be easy to quit if it was just about me, Khalil, that night, and that cop. It's about way more than that, though. It's about Seven, Sekani, Kenya, Devante. It's also about Oscar, Ayana, Trayvon, Rakia, Michael, Eric, Tamir, John, Ezel, Sandra, Freddie, Alton, Philando. It's even about that little boy in 1955, who nobody recognized at first. Emmett. The messed up part? There are so many more. Yet I think it'll change one day. How? I don't know. When? I definitely don't know. Why? Because there will always be someone ready to fight. Maybe it's my turn. Others are fighting too. Even in the garden, where sometimes it feels like there's not a lot worth fighting for. People are realizing and shouting and marching and demanding. They're not forgetting. I think that's the most important part. Khalil, I'll never forget. I'll never give up. I'll never be quiet. I promise. This is Bonnie Turpin. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of The Hate You Give by Angie Thomas. This program was produced by Dion Audio Services. The director was Ryan Burke. Executive producer, Caitlin Gehring. Text copyright 2017 by Angie Thomas. Production copyright 2017 by HarperCollins Publishers. All rights reserved. Thank you for listening.